right. Welcome back, everybody. Here we are once again. It is the Dom and Colin podcast. No Dom this week. He is off traveling. Shocking, I know. I am Colin here with you again, and joining me in Dom's place is someone I am very excited to have on the show for what I cannot believe is the first time ever. You, of course, know him as the co-host of Robin Akiva Need a Podcast, as well as the 32 Fans Podcast, Akiva Winokur. Keeve, welcome.
Colin, it's so great to be here. I was just thinking right before we went off air, I cannot believe this is my first time. That makes it sound like I can't believe you didn't invite me, but no, I'm just saying, like, we've peripherally known each other via the internet. Do you know how long we've sort of been in the same, like, Survivor universe for?
I could not put a date on it. It all kind of blurs to me. Anything that happened before, I don't know, 2016 or so within the Survivor community. Do you actually have a timestamp here?
Yeah, I just searched as we were about to start talking. People underutilize like Gmail search and Google search. Like, if your whole life, the reason not to talk to people in person is you could sort of get a like actual proof of everything you've said to people if you just email or G-chatted them back in the day. So if you search Colin Stone on my Gmail, I can very easily find my first conversation with you.
Oh, what? All right. When was it?
Okay, so you're not going to remember. It was Survivor Cagayan, so 10 Survivor seasons ago, or five years ago. It was actually from the end of 2013, right before Cagayan. My friend had started a startup, which was just like a bunch of conversations. Like, they'd have like famous authors on and they do conversations. Do you remember? Does this ring a bell yet, even?
Yeah, it 100% rings a bell. I didn't know that was the origin. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I had you on one week and we had a conversation about like some, let's say merge episode of Survivor Cagayan. I think maybe I had Dom on the next week, and we had, I think, Taj George on maybe once. We did a few of them. The company still exists, but not in that form.
I remember I was a couple weeks after the Schwab from Stump the Schwab.
Yeah, Stump the Schwab. I will say, a very nice man, Stump the Schwab, kind of a filthy casual. But it was like, I would ask him a question and be like, you know who I like? Cochran. And it's funny because, like, it's okay to just watch Survivor every week and not to think about it after the show's over, right? That's like 99% of people watch it. They love it. They watch it with their family. They don't give it one second thought, at 9 p.m., the second next week on Survivor ends. But Schwab had his bio. His Twitter bio wasn't like, I love sports. It was like, I love Survivor and like some weird soap opera. I think it was like Survivor and the Bold and the Beautiful. Like, that was his identity in life, was like he loved. But then when we talked Survivor, he like knew nothing. He's like, yeah, I like Cochran. And like, I would ask him other questions and he just couldn't answer them.
That's crazy that you found the greatest sports genius in the history of the planet who doesn't know the first thing about the show that he spent 14 years at that point watching.
So I see we're like in that conversation, and I could send you the link. You could link to it if anybody cares. I doubt anybody cares. We're like fan casting like an all winter season. I see we're like talking about how probably like Tony's about to be, voted out at the merge boot or something like that. Here's a good take. I think there's no combination of people for Tony to beat at Final Tribal. That was me, not you.
That's me giving that take?
That was my take, and then you responded with, I definitely agree that it's going to be tough for Tony to find two people he can beat at Final Tribal Council. Well, lucky for you, or for both of us, we did not know. Two unspoiled guys did not know that he only had to beat one person at Final Tribal Council. And then you said, I suppose I'm just giving him non-zero equity because I'd love to live in a world where Tony Vlachos is a Survivor winner.
Hey, I don't want to take all the credit, but me leaving the door open, I feel, played a non-zero role in that performance.
Yeah, there's a guy Sean Falconer. I don't know if you know him, who listens to my podcast, and I think he works for like one of the big tech companies in the Bay Area. And he like, if we ever ask him a question like, hey, how many times on the Seinfeld podcast, we could ask him a question like, how many times have we said the word like Elaine? And within like an hour, he'll like have the answer for us. I'm going to call on Sean Falconer to do that on this podcast with the words non-zero. Colin has said non-zero in the last 6 years.
All right. Well, I'm now going to be totally self-conscious about ever saying that again. But so thanks for that. Keeve, so excited. Yeah. I know I've kind of briefly set this up a little bit just to have you in here talking some Survivor today. And the place I want to just kind of dive into this Edge of Extinction season is, without even getting into the specifics of what we've seen to this point, what was your hot take or cold take potentially about just the twist in the first place when we heard the rumors all those months back?
I didn't hate it as much as probably I should have. I think that, like, you have to be fair. Like, if our – what's your goal? Is your goal to get, like, a few great seasons and just get quality? Or do we love the show so much we want it to be on the air forever and therefore it needs to adapt and we have to, like, acknowledge that the show's not always just for us. It needs to, you know, reach 9 million people a week, not, like, you know, 200,000 nerds like us. So they need to try things. And if they try things – for one season and it doesn't work and everyone lets them know, because the people let them know for the most part are the crazies, right? Because the casuals sort of sit home. Maybe somebody runs into Jeff Probst on the street, the metaphorical man on the street. But, they don't usually – it's not like they're still doing Redemption Island every season, although you could argue this is sort of that. Like, if something really flops, they'll get rid of it. There's two seasons a year, so it's not like Big Brother. It's a little less precious, where if they – make a mistake, they can easily rectify it for the next season. Next season is always, you know, 4 or 5 months away when it's over. I just think, like, it's worth trying. And if a person gets on, you know, gets voted back from Edge of Extinction and wins the season, yeah, obviously we'll, like, burn down the studio in Los Angeles and we'll go insane. But until that happens, I'm willing to give it a chance.
Right. I think you're totally correct that Survivor is in a position, especially given how successful it's been for decades, essentially, at this point, where they can say, look, this is a one-time attempt at this new twist. Maybe we'll find the next hidden immunity idol. And if it flops, who cares? We're going to be back and we can just abandon it entirely and go on to something different. And why not at least give it a chance after all of these years to find some new kind of thing that could potentially spark some new interest in the show or some new kind of element in the game that hasn't really been explored before. But the Edge of Extinction idea specifically, I think, really does at least raise the question of, at what point does a twist fundamentally alter the entire concept of Survivor?
And you could definitely make a very strong case. Like, the players don't know the rule of the game they're playing. Like, that is extremely unfair, right?
That alone, let alone the part of people getting voted out and then having multiple chances to come back in.
But I think when you're signing up, you know, again, like, think about it from a Big Brother. And I mentioned Big Brother a couple times. I detest Big Brother and I stopped watching it. But from a game structure, like, you know, going in that 100 things will happen that you have no control over and you just have to get lucky. Most Survivor seasons are not like that, but there is an element of things out of your control can you know, alter the game. One, this has happened before. It literally happened in season 7. So it's not like this is some newfangled Survivor thing. It happened before, you know, there had even been a returning player in the history of the show. Right. So it's not like we've never seen this before.
And Redemption Island, as you mentioned, we've seen multiple Redemption Islands.
Like, I'm saying, like, if any of these people really claim to be diehard fans, like, they've seen this multiple times. You know, some of these guys who claim to be diehard fans probably aren't even familiar with the Redemption Island era because we haven't seen that now in over 10 seasons, right?
Right. It has been 10 seasons. Wow.
10 seasons since a real Redemption Island, since Blood Water. I it's hard to say what's fair and what's not fair. I mean, put it this way. If I was on the show right now, if I was Victoria Bamande, right? I don't know if I'm pronouncing her last name right.
I have no idea, but I'm going to go with a hard yes. That sounds flawless.
I would be less annoyed about the – in terms of, like, my winner's equity, less annoyed about the fact that there's these hangers-on on the Edge of Extinction, or the Island of Extinction, or whatever the actual beach is. I guess the beach is called Edge of Extinction?
I believe that's right.
Yeah. And more worried about, like, oh, these four returning players, like, which one are the producers trying to, you know, tilt the game towards? Like, one of the really, like, if my friend who didn't watch the show was going on Survivor, one of, like, the main things I would tell them is, like, if there are returning players or, like, a fan favorite in the early on, like, don't even mention to the producers that you want them out. Don't mention it, because you never know what's going to happen. Like, I don't be the guy that they're like, oh, no, this person's going after a golden boy. Like, and I don't know if it's Joe, but I'm not saying that they manipulate the game, but we are saying that they can literally do a tribe swap whenever they want. It's not like it's a predetermined thing. We don't know when it's happening. So, you know, to me, that would be my sort of like, hey, this kind of isn't fair. Other than the, you know, the built-in advantages that returning players have to begin with, like, you know, who is the golden boy and how can we, like, I would never give a confessional in episode 2 saying I'm trying to get out Kelly Wentworth.
Yeah, I think that's a very astute point. And while we have been seeing a pretty surprising amount of newbies willing to be really open about targeting returnees early on, and maybe that's a lot easier when they all hear someone else start talking in that way and can then kind of pile on, because I'm guessing a lot of them are having the same thought. I would be totally with you, Keev, where if I were out there, my number one priority would be getting on the good side of the returnees with no question about it.
Yeah, I mean, especially in a season like this, like, you know, if you're on Kama, just getting on like Joe's good side, or if you're on Manu, just getting on Wentworth's good side, like take the golden boy, because I feel like ultimately like they'd be okay if one of the four attorneys goes in the first five boots, especially maybe David Wright, I don't know, or Aubrey. But especially because they're going to be such a big target, like a merge type boot or an odd number, like nine people left type boot. That's the ideal partner of all time. Like to be in an alliance with Joe in a season like this. I mean, you have to cut him because I think at a certain point, you know, he could win a vote if just people, you know, staring in awe at him. But that, you know, that's real like an ideal sort of early season, you know, merge type like ideal, you know, alliance mate.
What did you think of these specific four returnees being the people that they brought back here? Did you take any kind of issue with the way I don't know if you listened to this, but I talked in last week's podcast about how for me it felt weird in the cases of specifically Joe and Aubrey seeing them play with newbies, but for David and Wentworth it felt more okay for some reason just because of their less stellar Survivor resumes, I guess, to this point.
I mean, if we go back and we see like who are the guys, because there's two different types of returning seasons, right? There's the once you get to 10, then it's like, all right, you know, you're just bringing a mishmash of people. And obviously 20, there's no, you don't have to deal with new players. But in the seasons like this, where they've brought back two or three people, so, you know, you there's only a few of them, but you go back and you look at the injured player season where it's Scoopin and it's Russell Swan and it's who's the third guy?
Penner.
Who's the third injured player? And Penner. It's like, all right, they're like pretty evenly matched, right? Nobody has like an insane advantage in that season.
Right, right. And we've always talked about Bobby John being like the ideal level of returnee who's going to be there and be somewhat valuable early on, but is not going to be taking the game in like a stranglehold. And I think that's a hard returnee to find, frankly.
Right. Well, I think it's like the woo Bobby John level of like they were so clueless their first time that being a returnee just like means that now they've maybe seen the show once.
Right.
Because they were on it. And they have like an equal, you know, idea of what's going to happen than like the average nerd, you know, the Gavins or somebody who's probably watched the show a lot before.
Right. How much, if we want to go the mini Conspirapod route, how much do you think this twist had to do with specifically Joe being back? Because as you flagged up, I feel like you would have to scour the ends of the earth to find even new players who would not recognize how obvious it is that Joe cannot be let anywhere near an end game. So is it just a coincidence that he winds up on the season where every single person who starts the game is guaranteed a shot as long as they don't quit to have a chance to play a challenge at like final five or final six to get back in the game and then be an immunity and a fire away from winning?
It makes sense for like if you put your producer's hat on for a second, it makes sense. Like think about a show that I think we're going to talk about later, The Challenge. It's like they start off every season like, all right, we have a star and that star is Johnny Bananas. And then we're going to like build the cast. But we know we have a guy who brings everybody back every season. Survivor doesn't have the same advantage that The Challenge and a lot of other reality shows have because it sort of has some level of integrity for a reality show. You know, most seasons don't have that face that fans will know. Mm-hmm. But when they have a season, especially like they're taking a big risk with Edge of Extinction. It doesn't, there's no real like sexy thing that's going to like bring in new viewers. Not that the show is necessarily bringing any new viewers ever, but like it makes sense to like, oh, Joe's going to be our star and he's going to be there. Even if he's only there for the first seven or eight episodes, like he's a hook to the casual Survivor fan. They're going to see him and they're going to be excited. The Joe, the Ozzy, he's their Johnny Bananas, right? He's their star. That's like, you know, he's the lead banana, so to speak. And the other three people, it's like, all right, well, we can't just bring back Joe. That's absurd. And who is sort of, and if you bring back someone against Joe, it probably has to be like a Joe-ish you know, alpha male or alpha female. So it's got to be Malcolm, or it's somebody like that. So then at a certain point, it's just like, all right, who's popular? Who's available? Is there someone in particular you think should have been on instead of, you know, David or Aubrey or somebody?
Well, I would have said, like, I would be much more comfortable putting Dominic Abate and Chrissy Hofbeck out there with new players than with Aubrey and Joe, who Aubrey has played pretty close to 80 consecutive days of Survivor. And Joe has obviously been one of the biggest characters of the last, since the 30s have developed and has already had two solid runs under his belt. And furthermore, with specifically Joe, and this is something we talked about preseason, and this is why the twist being what it is seemed a little convenient to me, which is everybody knows how this is going to go for Joe. He's going to almost certainly make it to the merge, and then come merge time, be under the spotlight every single time that he does not have some form of immunity. And at a certain point, they will vote him out because everyone will recognize what a threat he is. And that, to me, is not necessarily something I need to see for a third time.
Right. And plus, I think at the merge, they'll know about Edge of Extinction at that point, right?
I think someone first will come in at the merge, but I was wondering if they would potentially even outright lie to the players and say, this is the only time this is happening. Don't worry about it from here on out.
Yeah, I don't know if they'll be able to do that.
I think
Probst will probably have to explain the rules at that point. I don't think they're going to be able to do that.
But I don't know.
The show is not usually complicit in lies like that, like sometimes they are on say, Big Brother.
But what I think they do love to do is lie by omission and just leave things and say, oh, you guys thought we were merging. I didn't say merge. We're just living on the same beach. And I think he being Jeff, could absolutely say, here we are, the Edge of Extinction play-in game is upon us, and one of you is going to get a chance to re-enter and join now that we're at the merge, and just never bring up the idea, don't say yes or no, and just hopefully the players don't think it's going to happen twice.
Right. I think any savvy player will know that they've never done that, so that it's possible but unlikely.
Yeah, okay. I don't know. The Edge of Extinction overall to me just seemed like, while as willing as I am to grant them whatever flexibility they want in terms of giving things a shot on Survivor, and totally understand they need to keep as many of those 9 million eyeballs tuning in each Wednesday night as they possibly can, this to me may be a new historic benchmark in terms of should have seen how obviously dumb this was coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they worked it out. They might not have the same concerns as you or I do in terms of fairness. You know, their goal is to make compelling television.
Sure.
How about this, though? We get to the merge. Somebody comes back. Let's say Reem comes back. OK, now pretend that Kiva and Colin are on the island. All right. We're two extra characters. We're playing with Joe. Not only, I think, would you want to vote Joe out once you know about the twist and you assume that they're coming back at some sort of Final Five scenario. You're also probably going to vote out the people who could potentially beat a Joe, the non-returning players, to have someone to knock him out, because you're talking about a challenge that might have 7 or 8 people, right? It's not like the old Redemption Island, like on Blood versus Water, where it's just the final 2 or final 3.
Right.
This is like some sort of mass challenge where you might just want to be taking out every single challenge beast in order to have like just a prayer of beating Joe, if that's really if Joe is really like the target number one, which, you know, who knows, 30 days from now we might not be.
Right. And that is definitely a good point. Someone's going to have to beat Joe at something along the way. And it also potentially raises the issue of, once you know Edge of Extinction has happened once, and especially if Jeff does announce, hey, this will be coming back in later into the game, the thought would at least cross my mind, well, hey, if Joe's going to get a chance to compete his way back in here anyway, why let him go butter up everyone at Edge of Extinction and never have to vote anyone out? Let's leave him in the game and make
him
get... It's tricky.
Because he could... I mean, there's a scenario we could never have met. We don't know how the jury's going to work at all, right?
We, I believe, have heard that they on the island don't know how the jury's going to work, but I think everyone who makes it to that final play-in challenge, all of the losers and then everyone who gets voted out subsequently will be on the jury. So we could have at least theoretically a 15-person jury.
Well, let me ask a question, because I really – maybe everyone knows the answer to this, but I don't know. All right. So let's say they do a the first time back from Edge of Extinction with seven people.
Okay.
Do the losers get to stay on Edge of Extinction until the end, or they're sort of the pre-merge boots?
They go back to Edge of Extinction and get another chance to play back. Reem
can
come back in.
So in theory, there could be 15 people on the jury.
Correct.
Even though we know there's not going to be.
We don't know that there's not going to. I don't know.
I mean, they're already talking about – I mean, just based on what's on screen, we don't even know if Keith goes. You know, we don't know if Reem's going to stay if Keith doesn't show up, because that's 6 days by yourself. By the way, what a huge disadvantage to get voted out at the beginning of a twist like this. And it should be. You should be disadvantaged by being the first boot. In fact, you should be home already. But imagine being the fourth boot and, like, the camp's already set up. And at a certain point, I'm no Jeff Pittman, but at a certain point, they go to every 2 days, right? So you're adding people. But, you know, at the beginning, it's every 3 days between challenges.
Yeah, it's brutal for Reem, where it's like she's been shipwrecked, and then when the seventh boot gets there, it's going to be like the island from Lost. They're just going to have a hatch full of food.
Yeah, yeah. No, by the way, props to her just to making it to day three. And speaking of 15, they at least implied a chance that Wendy – we could talk about the next week on Survivor, right?
Sure.
Wendy may have an injury that knocks her out of the game, right?
That looked bad, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, why would they show that in the preview if she's not, unless they really have nothing to show us?
If she's not what?
If it's not a major issue in next week's episode, why would they bother in next week on Survivor showing us a minor leg injury to Wendy?
To me, I'm never going to be reading too much into the next time on Survivor and why they're including stuff into that.
But it's just boring if it's not. I guess maybe, you know, they're just trying to, maybe she's going to get medevac. But
right. I think that's what they were going for.
I would love to know the history if you have any, like, statistically inclined people out there. Like, how often do they sort of semi-spoil or, like, allude to someone being hurt? Because sometimes they don't, right? Sometimes it comes out of nowhere. You know, there's sort of like no buildup, and then somebody just leaves, especially early in the season if it's someone we don't really know. And then sometimes it's, you know, they play it out for two episodes and then they go home.
We'll get Sean Falconer on that one as well.
I think he could do it. I'm sure there's people out. It's not just Sean Falconer. There's some people out there who could.
How many times did you say Elaine over the course of your Seinfeld podcast?
Well, the issue with the Elaine thing, Colin, was that when he did the numbers for Jerry, Elaine, George, and Kramer, we said Elaine's name way less than the other three. So, you know, the computer was essentially saying we're like huge sexists. So then for the rest of the series, every episode, we just randomly say Elaine's name like 10 times to mess with the algorithm. We just say like Elaine, 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 Elaine.
That's the woke thing to do, Akiva.
It was the woke thing to do. Yes. Yeah. It was just to catch up.
Yeah. I was going to say about just this Edge of Extinction and Reem being there. I liked that. The episode just kicks off with what Reem is up to on Edge of Extinction, and it's only like 90 seconds, maybe 2 minutes of checking in with her. And while I am preparing myself for the Edge of Extinction segments to get progressively, potentially a lot worse, and
especially if like Joe is the fifth boot, I mean, we're going to spend 12 right. minutes an episode there.
Right. But at least at this point, it is no problem with me, and it is actually exceeding expectations for me.
I mean, the shot, they must have been ecstatic because the shots are beautiful. The island looks great, right? It almost looked like Lost. Like, people were posting screen caps from the Edge of Extinction shots, and it looks amazing. Like, they did a great job. And here's another big thing I thought of. We've discussed, a lot of people have discussed, for the Genius fans out there, like, how can Survivor have cliffhangers, right? There's every show ends the same way, which is somebody being voted out, meaning like it's the end of a chapter and the next episode starts a new chapter. They've basically for the first time figured out like, every week we could sort of have some sort of cliffhanger, at least at the beginning, with will they or won't they go to Edge of Extinction? You know, who's going to be there? Maybe when they get there could be a thing. If, you know, like maybe if Keith quits and then we get, you know, the third boot is Julia and then she gets there and hey, is Reem still there? And Julia gets there and it's like, Reem, are you here? Like, cut, fade to black, and that's the end of that episode. So I think it's an interesting idea that, like, we're in season 38. You know, they figured out how to do cliffhangers, and I wonder if they like that so much. Because to me, it's really worked two episodes in a row. When they haven't had that much content on the island, let's be honest, if they're going to try and figure out other ways to sort of play with the format enough that they could, hey, you know, you got to stay tuned next week to find out – you know, what the answer to this cliffhanger is. Not that I'm losing sleep over whether Keith goes to the edge of extinction, but it was definitely produced very well.
So, yeah, let's get into that. I know, obviously, we're skipping way ahead in the episode, which is fine. To Keith. And it, no, it's totally fine. In that decision at the end. And my first thought was maybe the reason this is a cliffhanger is because he's going to say no. It made me think it's more likely now than I ever would have thought that he would actually just outright pass on going to Edge of Extinction, because they would potentially not want to have the second episode end in such a deflating way of someone already giving up and then potentially Reem leaving once no one comes and joins her. But I did then wonder if maybe this new hashtag quithanger, as I'm calling it, is potentially a weekly thing where every week we get the suspense of, is this person going to take
it? Oh, we're going to get sick of that by week four. It was really well done this time, but at a certain point, first of all, it's frustrating because, listen, I'm not a person who wants to be on the show, but I know the people at home who watch who want to play like, this is quitting. Like, it drives the actual fans insane, right? Like, to have a chance to stay in the game and to quit, it's crazy. And it was a very real moment, like Keith essentially preying on it. Like, it was very cool. You know, it looked, I'd say, unusual, but it was maybe very personal, like, to just see him go back and forth like that. But it's also very frustrating. Like, what are you doing? Like, why don't you get there and figure it out then? Like, if it sucks, you could leave. You're not going to find out what it is. That's insane.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know which direction that's going to go in terms of if that could be a recurring thing. But it certainly wouldn't surprise me to see them at least go back to that kind of quit hanger concept. Although, you know, if we do see the string of like the first seven people all just immediately take it, I don't think there's going to be a ton of suspense.
So you mentioned that they're only spending like 2 minutes on the Edge of Extinction right now. But if you have to divide the pie, one of the things I hated about Redemption Island was, and not just season 22, but all, you know, all of those seasons, is that when you get to the, oh, we have to have a challenge every episode, that's 10 minutes of the show. That means we're not learning anything about the characters back camp. It's just, a dumb challenge to let somebody back in the game, or to eliminate somebody, and then go to camp for 2 seconds, talk about, you know, maybe a reward challenge, or usually don't have a reward challenge in Redemption Island season, and then just go straight to, an immunity challenge, and then you know, it get ready for the boot. Like, there's no margin. If something fun happens, you'll never see it, right? Like, there's no character development. You don't know as much about the alliances. So here it's like, well, one episode they could show us 3 minutes, and one episode they could show us 6 minutes, where if you're doing a challenge, you're like locked into like a 7-8 minute challenge at the beginning of every episode.
Right. I think the flexibility of Edge of Extinction compared to Redemption Island, where that challenge is just built in to every single episode, is one of its only like redeeming features compared to Redemption Island, which really eats into a lot of
the such a time suck.
Right. Although, again, I do anticipate that Edge of Extinction is going to probably get more and more focus over the course of the season, and it's going to be really brutal spending however much time in a merge episode and probably a pre-finale episode on the Edge of Extinction challenge, when I would guess, at least, barring someone going on a huge challenge run, the Edge of Extinction, in terms of the impact it will have on the game, I think is going to be pretty close to Redemption Island, right? Where whoever re-enters is almost every time going to just get taken out again right away.
Probably, unless it's like a non-threat that happens to luck out and win a challenge.
Okay. Yeah. There obviously it could go a number of different ways, but I would definitely bet in general.
Yes. In general. That if it happened 10 times, that person would very frequently be targeted. Absolutely.
Right. Which is going to be, and that's going to be annoying to have those challenges take up so much time in critical episodes when it's probably not going to amount to a whole lot. But again, to just kind of go back to the whole perspective of the producers, I do understand them wanting to take a big kind of swing like this. It's clearly been something they've been making a habit of these last several seasons. And I actually think one very underrated kind of element in the Survivor superfan community is just how different our perspective is from the 99% of people who are watching the show casually. And I think, honestly, casual fans love challenges.
Yeah. It's really the thing I grapple with most, in as much as I grapple with a TV show. I have a family and four kids. Like a week like this, I'm doing a Survivor podcast. I watch the challenge. But to be perfectly honest, I will fast forward almost every reward challenge at this point, unless there's something unique about it or it's an old school, if it was an auction or there was a family sort of element. It doesn't do it for me. However, as someone who just the other day brought up to my wife, hey, I think like this season, my kids have never watched Survivor outside of like being in the room when it's on. They've never watched the full season. And you realize like, oh, this is an amazing family show. I get why it's still on the air, because it's such like a kosher, like clean show that you can watch with your family, not have to worry really about anything, like even PG-13 happening if you have little kids. And the kids care way more about the challenges than anything else, including like the actual vote at the end of the episode, which is the only thing people like you and I really care about, like the primary thing. If I was in charge of the show, I'd do what they're doing now. But the challenges, like after 38 seasons, I'm not sick of the show, but I am sick of the challenges. And I will say, like speaking of the word challenge, you watch a show like this and then right afterwards watch MTV's The Challenge because it's on the same night. One of these shows has 9 million viewers, Colin, and one of them has 1 million viewers. And if I just showed like a random person up the street and said, which of these shows has a bigger budget? I think like 100% of the people we showed this to would say The Challenge has a much bigger budget than Survivor, right?
Totally. Yeah. Certainly this season, they've really ramped up the set design. But yeah, in general, I think that is a totally fair observation.
Right. And they give away $1 million, which Big Brother still gives away $500,000, which is one of the great scams of all time.
That's wild to me.
Adjusted for inflation. I think, not to be Mr. Moneybags over here, but like, Big Brother Canada gives away $100,000, which I think is like $72,000 US, which I'm not knocking. But if you don't win that show, I believe they're paying you less than minimum wage to finish like in second place. If you think about it.
Yeah. If you're charging 20, you're billing 24 hours a day. Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, I know we're a little off topic here, but if I was in the Big Brother house like that, I would definitely start talking about a union, at which point like Alison Grodner would get very mad and probably like punch you in the face or something. Like, hey, can you imagine if a cast unionized, like, hey, we're walking out unless you raise the prize money and you have no show and it's August 3rd and the show's off the air for the rest of the season?
I mean, something similar to that happened, not with prize money, but with the reward challenges in Survivor Borneo, where mm-hmm. they one of the challenges with like five or six people left, they'd had some decent rewards to that point, and then Jeff just brought out this today you're playing for a Snickers bar, and everyone revolted and said, we're not playing unless you give us something.
They did not read the room.
I don't know how far you would get trying to unionize in the Big Brother house, because
I think it's a fun idea. I think it would be incredible.
I just mean rallying the troops in a covert way when you were constantly monitored and videotaped.
Well, you'd really have like 10 minutes before you get called to thy room and maybe never be seen again.
Yeah. Keith, I want to go back to just talking a little bit about the returnees in general, because early mm-hmm. on this episode, we see a lot being discussed initially from Wendy, but it certainly becomes a talking point after the blue team loses the challenge from a lot of other people as well, that potentially gunning for Kelly sooner rather than later may be the call. And we see David Wright at least appears to be on board with this idea, a fellow returnee himself. But one thing that seems to be the case on both tribes is just kind of general anti-returnee sentiment to an extent that I never would have anticipated. And we talked in last week's podcast about the over under 3.5 returnees being in the main game at the merge. Where do you land on that?
I mean, that is the number, right? 2.5 is too low and you can't go higher than 3.5. But I think I'd go under. I think if we're saying the merge is going to happen, does that include someone coming back also? Like, there are a couple of variables there. But if you're saying, like, is the merge at 12 in this scenario? Like, okay, there's 12 players left in the game.
The intent of the question is, how many returnees will make the merge without being voted out?
Yeah. So I'm speaking out of that. I'm going to say 3. I'm going to say under 3.5. I'm going to say someone, most likely David Wright. He's the least useful to the producers. He's the least useful if you're sitting sleeping next to him in a shelter. Like, I'm going to say 3. And my guess is David Wright. But The only person my mind would be blown if was gone was Joe. Because if they're already voting for Wentworth or discussing it in episode two, like, she's going to have to face some serious live bullets very soon.
So I would change my answer from last week. I was on the over last week. I am down to three along with you, Keeve. Although I agree Joe would be my number one safest. I may actually have David as my number two safest at this point, just after what
we've
seen.
Yeah, he's not a target. That's right. What I didn't really think of.
Right, and we saw him bonding with Rick this week, and it seems like he was being looped into all of the major relevant conversations that were going on with everyone on that team, and people seem to be generally liking him. Or at the very least, we're not hearing the same kind of anti-David stuff that we are hearing about Wentworth on that tribe. But in this week's episode, what really stood out to me was that sequence they showed of Aubrey saying the exact same thing to every single newbie on her tribe, and Victoria and Julia comparing notes and not being able to rat her out to everyone fast enough. It really seemed like Aubrey was, to me, the person to be the most nervous about now entering episode three, just because I think there's a big difference between in how they treat a returnee, between Kelly Wentworth this episode looking like she may get voted out because she's a huge threat, but she's able to overcome that and she seems to be at least okay going forward, versus a solid couple of minutes really going out of their way to make Aubrey look like just a bad player.
Right. That's true. It's right. They do show her in an interesting light. However, we've already finished 6 days and they have not gone to tribal council. So what are they going to show us? Like, how about this? I'm sure that all nine people have been heavily discussed in terms of their name has been thrown out by somebody.
Sure.
Because, I'm sure things have changed between the first vote and the second vote, which they didn't have to do anyway. I think that, put it this way, like, to get a little meta, like, I'm sure the producers had clip footage of at least seven or eight of the nine people being heavily discussed, and it's not interesting to show us Victoria or Julie Rosenberg because we don't even really know who they are yet. So it's like we got to paint a story that either Aubrey or Joe is on the chopping block, and maybe Joe, it's like, well, that, you know, he's too precious to even mention that. We don't want to incept that idea into the universe. Like,
sure.
So it's very possible, and I agree. Like, it's never a good sign if they're showing you in any sort of negative light this early in the season if you're sort of a big-time player.
Right, exactly. And, I mean, I guess, you know, last season premiere, Nick Wilson had what a lot of people thought was like a very or at least I thought was a somewhat sketchy premiere, and he went on to win. And it really does seem like they have done a lot to balance their range, I guess, so to speak, in terms of finally being willing to show more kind of negative things from an eventual winner. But it just, in the case of particularly a returnee like Aubrey, who I'm guessing if she did win, they would want to paint her story in a bit of a different light than getting off to this kind of a bad start, when I would suspect she has such a built-in fan base, people would already be on board and want to be rooting for Aubrey.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, I guess maybe she doesn't win. Like, you know,
right.
There's 16 people left and I'm not sure she's going to win. Like,
right.
That's why
I would say Aubrey to me is the one, the returnee, at least at this point, who is standing out as the one potentially on the immediate chopping block, but certainly not locking in like Aubrey is doomed by any stretch. But let's talk about one other returnee that we touched on a little bit, and it sounds like you have potentially lowest on your board, David Wright, who for me it seems like has been playing, I would say, at least a decent game, if not a very solid game to this point. But it sounds like something isn't either sitting right with you about something he's doing or the position he's in.
No. He hasn't done anything wrong. I mean, from a overall sort of like, you know, who, you know, which giant will fall first? Like, he is the least of the four. He would have been maybe the one that we'd have been like, hey, I wonder if we could, you know, workshop if we were the cast, if we were casting for the show. I wonder if we could workshop and find someone like, you know, other than David Wright.
Okay.
Not that he's done anything wrong on screen yet, which I don't think he really has.
Okay, I got you. Because this week we saw David and Rick really bond, and as far as I can tell, this seems to be the tightest duo that we've seen a lot of on, I think, probably either of the tribes to this point, and that's always going to jump out to me when they go out of their way to highlight this kind of thing. It seems like David and Rick, over the course of this vote, were always in the discussions for what was going to happen, and people were listening to them and wanted to definitely be on their side. And these two have really stood out to me so far on the Blue Tribe, based on, among others, but in terms of who seems to be really in the driver's seat, I would say going forward, my money would be on David and Rick.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that we can, that we know is absolute is who someone votes for, right? Because everything else could be edited. And the truth is that three people only have voted for the right person both times. And that's David, that's Rick, and that's Chris.
Never had no idea about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, because Kelly and Lauren went Wendy and War Dog went Wendy, right?
Sure.
But yeah, I guess, was that a vote split?
I would count that as a vote split and being in on the first time.
Okay, fine. So I take it back.
No, that's fine. Technically, like, the stats department will count
right. Jeff Pimmons were up, but fine. But intent, I think intent matters. They really – the vote split really messed with the this person voted for the right person every episode type thing.
Vote splitting has thrown off Survivor stats for so long that it renders a ton of Survivor stats almost meaningless.
Yeah, that's fair. But yeah, no, they're definitely, are they calling the shots? They're at least in the know. And that's all you can ask to be right now after day six.
Yeah. And do you have a call on which of these two may be more inclined to cut the other one? Because we heard them kind of joke about that. And I could see it being like a Dom and Wendell situation where the whole game, they're almost open with each other about, we can work well together now, but we obviously don't want to sit together at the end.
Was that Rick who said to David, you'll cut me at Final Four, or vice versa?
Rick said, I promise, I'll shake on, I'll cut you at Final Four.
Yeah, which is very funny, because it's like, what, like, the stat heads, like us, we would say that, like, as a joke, and he said it, right? Have we really had somebody make this sort of joke, but it's not really a joke, out loud before? Has somebody said, the extent of, like, we're in it till the end, and then it's like everybody for themselves, like, one vote before... You know, it's too late. Maybe it's another example of Survivor growing up a little bit. And, the smart people have seen this, 37 versions of this at this point.
Right. I think probably Adam Klein and David his first time had roughly that understanding.
Yeah,
And I know Dom and Wendell would say to each other openly, are we killing each other yet or not? And they both always understood we are not going to sit at the end together, at least if we can help.
Right. It. Yeah. But I like just saying it out there. Like, there is such a thing as, like, there's no reason to make a big move, on day four. But, obviously you can wait to, you could be too late, but you can't be too late. You can be definitely too early.
Right. I think it could go either way easily in terms of one of them making the first move. We've certainly seen David be a Survivor player in his history who tries to get ahead of his opponent and not, he definitely doesn't want to be too late. He would rather strike slightly early than leave open the possibility of waiting too long.
No, I mean, whose perspective are we really seeing that from? Like, Rick's or David's? It's a tough call. I don't know. It's really, to me, it's 50-50 almost. Who's at this point?
I'm with that, but I definitely see them as a duo to watch at this point. And another person actually on that tribe, on the Blue Tribe with them, that I liked a lot this week was Lauren, who found the hidden immunity idol. And I was very excited to see someone in, like, the Lauren mold come away with this, because it probably has been since, like, Kelly Wentworth that we've had a younger woman in the game with an idol, right? Or I guess Angelina's not old by any stretch, but the young single lady who she idolizes Parvati.
Well, Angelina's not old, but Angelina's 28 and Lauren's 21, and that's a lifetime of difference.
Right. And I think it's going to be, first of all, a lot of fun just having Lauren in there. And it seems like, at least at this point, she hasn't told anyone about it, which I always like to see and think is exciting. And then also to just have literally Kelly Wentworth there on her tribe is a lot of fun as the like meta reference of it all.
It's also funny because, you go back to Kelly Wentworth's first season, the idea that she'd not only be back on the show, but be back on the show at a point where someone would be like nervous to be in like a, friends with her, is hilarious because, one of the like the least edited people on an underwhelming season could have easily never seen her again. And nobody would have been like, freaking bring back Wentworth. What's going on? Comes back again, makes an impact, but is not really in the end game. And it's funny. She's like a titan of the game now. She's an icon.
Yeah.
It's, I feel like this happened on Twitter. I don't know if this happened on the – I mean, it happened on the show with the immunity idols. I guess the deck is so stacked against women finding immunity idols. If you find them, you're a legend. It makes sense.
And, you know, she canceled out 9 votes with one of those idols.
No, then, absolutely. I'm not knocking her second time on the idol. I'm just saying, like, after her first time, it is funny that she is – you know, like, you know, she could be on season 40 again. Like, she is, like, legitimately, you know, if, for a show that has sometimes struggled to have sort of, like, alpha females, they found one with her.
Oh, I think, I don't know the state of the Survivor Hall of Fame at this point, but if they reopened voting and Wentworth goes on another deep run here, I could see her being a popular candidate in a couple years.
She'd have to win, I think. I think at this point she'd have to win to make it.
Maybe it would take exactly first place, but another really deep run I think would put her in the mix potentially. But I mean, with recency bias,
how could you put her in over Aubrey? Like, unless, you know, if she doesn't win this, like, Aubrey's at least gone deep twice. Like, even in this cast, I wouldn't put her in.
They may be playing for the number one contender spot for the Survivor Hall of Fame.
I'm pretty sure it doesn't exist anymore, but oh man, the stakes are huge.
Yeah. All right, so Lauren comes up with that idol, and we heard a little from Julie on the other tribe talking about how annoying it was that all the guys were out looking for idols, and she tried to, like, rally Victoria and Julia and others to potentially be doing the same. But we haven't seen anything, I believe, right, of the yellow team idol yet?
No. It's so frustrating. It's not frustrating, but, like, you know, it's limiting on a podcast like this, how much we can really, like, I'd love to know more about Julie, especially, like, you know, fellow, like, New York City Jewish person, like, sort of an interesting archetype, like the Upper West Side mom. I'm not sure we've seen that on the show ever before. Like, I feel like the Upper West Side people are a very sort of unique type of person. Like Julie, Aurora, Eric, like, we've just seen so little of them, you know?
Yeah.
It's so skewed towards, you should lose on purpose just for the fans' sake in the first two episodes, so we get to know who you are.
Actually, one thought.
Be throwing.
A thought that I've had recently about the challenges, and I don't think I've put this out onto any of the podcasts yet, so now seems like the time. It occurred to me watching this week's episode, it really feels like in the seasons where we start with two tribes, a huge percentage of the time, at least for the last many years, whichever tribe wins the first immunity also wins the second immunity. And it's one tribe going to both of the first couple tribal councils, and then maybe we swap or maybe we don't. But setting aside the three tribe seasons, it seems like way more often than not, other than like millennials versus Gen X, I think, going way, way back, it's either 2-0 or nothing too, I guess, depending on which perspective you are.
Right. Well, it makes sense, Colin, because one, like, unless it's – I mean, some challenges are kind of coin tosses anyway, and it's 50-50, and it shouldn't be. But if a challenge really relies on athletic ability or strength or puzzle solving, it makes sense – and these challenges are always so similar from one to the other – that if one tribe is strong enough to, like, easily win the first challenge, and guess what now? They can sit their weakest competitor for the second challenge.
Right.
Like,
well, that's what I'm getting into.
They should be a heavy favorite. Should be a heavy favorite in the second challenge.
That's what I'm building up to, which is an idea I had, a Survivor think tank idea inspired by recently watching Society Game 2, where it's two teams essentially playing daily challenges against each other. And when one team takes a numbers advantage, the other team picks who sits out. And this sounds like, at first glance, I understand, it sounds like you're disadvantaging the strongest players. But in practice, if you think about this, this would be a massive, massive safety net for the strongest players, because it becomes so much harder to vote out one of your strongest guys. Like, for instance, it becomes so much harder, much bigger liability to vote out Drew Christie, and now the other tribe can sit out Jeremy, and Missy is forced to play. And inversely, it is such a liability when you know if we keep both Courtney and Sandra in the game, they're going to be forced to play every single challenge for us.
Right.
It is a massive safety net for the physical players. It drastically
who really don't need another safety net like pre-merge. Also,
right. But it reduces their kind of threat level, for, at least from the other tribe's perspective. And then also, obviously, if you're production, it's a good idea to want the challenges to be more balanced, and it hits every single one of those.
First of all, it's a great idea. It's an excellent idea. There will be – the Survivor Facebook will be blown up with people saying, well, that's not fair because why are you being disadvantaged for winning the first challenge? You know, you shouldn't – the winning team should be picking it. If I could tweak it, I'd say – because, I mean, if we really wanted to get into the weeds, if this was sort of – if we're trying to sort of make it both ways, you could say like, all right, protect two people, but they're not sitting the worst person. Like the other tribe can – sort of pick and then maybe throw in the caveat. You can only pick, you know, if we're doing this a few times, someone can only be set once before the merge, even if, let's say, tribes are swapped or something like that.
It's standard rule. You can't sit someone back-to-back challenges.
Right. But again, it's tricky because a lot of times we see swaps after two episodes. So that's almost irrelevant, right?
Sure. It just seems much, much more fair. And I know it's counterintuitive.
It is.
But
it's a really good idea. What about this, though? What if you're literally picking out of a hat? And that sort of makes it more fair.
I don't know how to anybody friendly. Could be sit. The hat, as great as it is for podcasts, you know, get out there and spin a big wheel, Akiva, maybe the solution to all of this. I don't know how TV friendly that is.
It's not TV friendly, but it's more TV friendly. My other idea of you get to protect three people. And they get to, like at this point, it's like, all right, that's half the episode for Jeff
choose
explaining
your
these
tribunal
rules.
That will be safe this week.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And then like maybe we see like the whole discussion behind it. I mean, it's we're joking. And yes, they probably should not show that. But it is sort of one of the limitations when they play with the format. Is like, let's say these last episodes were pretty basic Pat Survivor, nothing great, nothing terrible. But what if they had, you know, a bunch of epic things happening or a big fight at camp or, you know, some major strategic things happening? We're so limited now by like the 42 minutes thing. And in this era, it's like the only shows that are restricted to the structure are like the television shows on CBS, ABC, NBC, and Fox, right?
Right.
Because cable shows have no problem going like, hey, this week we're going to be an hour 22 and next week we'll be 54 minutes. And obviously once you get to premium, you know, like HBO, they could care less. And obviously on Netflix, time is like not even, you know, a concept. So one of the beauties of Survivor is like you can still have the zillion-dollar show because it has this, you know, the last sort of big money thing. And what's really amazing is like we always thought like when is Survivor going to end? Con like when yeah. You know like when are people going to stop watching? And now it's like Survivor's going to end because TV dies, right? Like in 5 years like network TV will just die, and then like that may kill Survivor, like unless Hulu wants to save it or something. Like it's funny, like it could outlast the medium at this point,
right? I mean, Survivor is such an outlier in terms of ratings. And the ratings are going down almost, but like just barely losing people is.
Yeah, no, the show is like a smash hit. Like
yeah,
2 years ago,
it's an enormous
was like
victory in 2019 to just barely lose people.
Yeah, 2 years ago, it with like slightly better numbers, it was like the 31st most popular show on TV. And I bet this year it'll be like the 10th most popular.
It's still every single Wednesday the number one show on television.
It's also amazing because almost the same amount, like the same amount of people watch every single episode. Like we could talk about like, well, they do for season 40. Like I'm sure they probably will do something special, like mostly or all returnees. But like one, they probably have to pay. You probably have to like if you're getting big names, you probably have to pay them some sort of, you know, fee like they did in All Stars. And two, it's like you're dealing with bigger egos and there's really no evidence that people watch more. Right. A lot like Heroes vs. Villains, it didn't like blow the season before or after out of the water in terms of ratings. I think it was pretty much the same. I don't think there's a lot of evidence.
I think the returnees, not only in full returnee seasons, but in even, you know, contexts like we're seeing this time or in Fans versus Favorites or Blood versus Water, where it's half and half, it exists to try to just like keep people interested, right? Like have a situation where people will know from episode one, okay, I got Tyson, I know who that is. I know who
that's my guy.
Right, right. I think an attempt to it sounds like so patronizing, but like I don't mean to treat casual viewers like little children, but like that familiarity I think really does go a long way in keeping people tuned in.
I guess. I mean, that's that makes sense, but then like it's weird. You know, sometimes you see dad and you're like, they can't be true, but it's almost like I'm not sure the dad is there because it just seems no matter what they do, the ratings are like the exact same.
Yeah, I don't think the ratings would deviate a ton pretty much no matter what they did in the 8 p.m. on Wednesday time slot as long as they were calling it Survivor. Like I know I'm in the same boat as you, Keeve, with Big Brother where I just stopped watching the show entirely because it became a completely unrecognizable show to what it once was. But it's still on three nights a week on CBS and called Big Brother, and people just go with it.
Yeah, for some reason that show is actually, we talk about Survivor getting less popular. So Big Brother has like weirdly gotten more popular. It's like been taken over by some like crazy factions of Twitter that obsess about it. And again, it's the type of show you could watch, you know, worry about all day and night, which is people like us who maybe spend too much time talking about a show that's really only on 40 minutes a week, where there they have endless content because it's on 24/7. But like for some reason, Big Brother seems to be made for Twitter. I mean, it makes people insane, and like it makes the show unwatchable for people who like value their sanity. But
Big Brother is kind of like what 24-hour news networks wish they were. There's virtually always something to talk about with Big Brother.
Always something to talk about, right? Because if you walk in and your grandma's watching Fox News, or she calls you up and is like, "Hey, did you hear about this?" And you're like, "No, like I'm on Twitter 24 hours a day, and that did not come across my feed because it's an unimportant story. It's like not interesting." But then if you're like at their house and they watch Fox News, and it's like, "Oh, they're on hour four of talking about this non-existent scandal that no one's going to remember next week." So you're right. Like it's like, "Oh, we don't feel," it's like the Lauren Michaels quote, like Saturday Night Live doesn't go on because we're ready. It goes on because it's 11:30 at night. So it's the same thing. So like with TV news, it's like it's on because they have to fill 24 hours a day. And with Big Brother, it's like, oh, no, they have 24 hours of content, and they're going to like, spam us with it on Twitter all day.
Yeah. As someone who used to work in TV news, and I can assure you, not every one of those stories about gas prices was vital.
Yeah. I think that's fair to say.
All right. Keeve. A couple other newbies that I wanted to get your take on here. There aren't a ton that we've seen too much from. We talked a little about Wendy just kind of in passing, but she's really stood out to me as one of the people it seems like is emerging as kind of a focal point, at least on that tribe. And in this episode, when she was once again one of the people considered for elimination, we hear something that really stood out to me. Wentworth just kind of makes an offhand remark about Wendy saying she just wants to get to a swap and then turn on us. And I honestly feel like at this point, Wendy may be one of my front runners to do just that and be around for a while. It really seems like, you know, unless that ankle injury or whatever it is next week really does take her out of the game, I am buying the Wendy stock right now. Where are you on Wendy and her chances of going pretty far?
Yeah, well, I guess to sort of counter what I said before, like, she's kind of been a big character, so it'd be weird to, because a lot of times they like to hide in plain sight the people who get, you know, sort of the minor early injuries.
That's a good
because
point, yeah.
Why get you attached to them if they're just going in a very frustrating way in the middle of an episode and let's like not even talked about, you know, once they kept, like, who's the quitter I'm trying to think of someone who had like a really like barely didn't even get like a commercial break
season didn't get a time.
Oh, but at least that was like at a challenge. But yeah, that was very unceremonious. But then I'm blanking the last 10 seasons. Like I used to like know everything off the top of my head, and I don't rewatch the show anymore. So now was it on Woo's tribe? What was her name?
A quitter? Oh, Lindsay.
Lindsay, right. It was like they barely got a commercial break. Like, all right, Lindsay's gone. Let's not even discuss it.
Yeah.
Stuff like that, where it's like those people like, oh, yeah, you could sort of see it because they get no camera time. Anyway, Wendy, just knowing their names, because I didn't do any really preseason research, I thought like, oh, this is a person who, you know, six times out of 30 is like the first or second boot. Right. Because she's a big character. Maybe she gets on somebody's nerves and like maybe she's not a challenge beast. But now, like, I feel like the longer she's in there, it's like, at least from a, you know, I don't know what it's like being on the island with her. It's like, oh, yeah, she's going to become a fan favorite. Like, she is such a character. She's so interesting. Did we know preseason she had Tourette's? Like, that's fascinating. I don't think we've had a character with Tourette's before on the show.
I believe we, I'm pretty confident we have not. And I also believe you were right that we did not know about that before the season started. Which is pretty, and I think, you know, the fact that the show was willing to explore that angle, to me, almost can conclusively rule out that she's going to get medevaced.
Well, I think it's still interesting. I think, plus, maybe the show wants to pat themselves on the back. I have a lot of love for people with Tourette's, because when I was taught in a school for kids with special needs, one of my students has Tourette's, and I'm Facebook friends with him, and really, to this day, if I get slightly depressing for a second, like, and this is a guy who's like very online, like he's posting on Facebook like 10 times a day. And like you see like how it, and his is way more severe than Wendy's, like how it affects his life, like, you know, really can't keep a job, because what kind of, you know, if you're yelling all day, you know, what type of job is going to be understanding enough to let it go? And I think he's driving Uber now, which is really sort of the first steady work he's found in like 12 years. But anyway, so I love Wendy. In terms of how far she's gonna, it just seems like she's good. Something big is gonna have to happen, right? Like she's going to either make a big move or have some sort of epic downfall or try and make a big move and fail, right? Because we're seeing too much Wendy for her not to be a major story at some point soon.
Right. That's roughly where I'm at as well. And I'm definitely going to be excited to see someone like Wendy in there, potentially in a kind of swing vote or power player position, someone who on day two or three or whatever it was going around to the clear majority alliance saying thanks, but no thanks.
Right. Right. She is. Here's the thing. Like, you have to treat the people. It's tricky because how do you treat, like, people aren't even in your alliance who you're voting against on, you know, in episode one or episode two. How do you make them not flip? Like, I don't know how that's possible. How do you preach, you know, tribe loyalty to somebody like that?
You just lie straight to their face as often as possible, as far
right.
as I can
mean,
tell.
You can. The only thing you can do, which I think they are doing, which we've seen in the past, like Shambo style, can go wrong, is like, the very least, just treat them like a human being. Like, you know, you're not voting with them. Maybe you're not sharing any sort of information, but, you know, make sure that even if it's not one-on-one, so people aren't paranoid that you're discussing strategy with them, like, make sure that, like, you know, that you make them feel that they're on a team, even if they're not like the important part of the team, and that you actually care about them and like be nice to them, you know?
Right. Right. Totally. Another one of the newbies that I can't believe hasn't come up by now, but, what are you thinking so far about War Dog, who, it seems for the second consecutive week, seemed to get a very solid kind of role within the episode and seemed to have a square head on his shoulders. What have you been making of his kind of role within the game to this point?
I mean, his primary role appears to be on Twitter, right?
Like, yes. Can I say, I tweeted preseason something to the effect of, like, I'm going in totally cold on this cast, but the one thing that I do feel like I can say with some degree of confidence at this point is that this is going to be a cast that is very big on the Wednesday evening quarterbacking on Twitter, just mm-hmm. because of how much War Dog and Aurora and Julie were showing up on my timeline, despite never, you know, not following them to this point. I don't mm-hmm. like to follow active contestants for that exact reason. And I do just want to say, I don't believe many people at least are listening who are on this season, but for the love of God, not just this cast, all future Survivor casts, you will have your chance to tell your side of the story. I promise
right.
you. Please keep it unspoilery.
Don't do it in real time. Don't do it in real time.
Exactly. You will have so much time to tell your side of things.
Mm-hmm. Right. And also, it just makes you seem like, you don't want people to be like, oh, this guy's so online that he is probably the second or the third boot, even if you're not. Because one, if you do well in the game, but you act like you're, you know, like you have to explain everything because you did really poorly, then it's like, all right, fine, congratulations, you did well in the game, but you came off, you lost Twitter. You may have won Survivor, or you may have come in fourth on Survivor, but you lost the social media battle. And, you know, act like you've been there before, even though you haven't, right? Like, you don't need to, every time someone mentions your name, you don't have to swoop into the mentions.
Right.
You know, like, I don't know.
I don't know, obviously, what it's like to be in that position, and I can't even imagine what it would be like, nor am I interested in finding out what it would be like in that position, but it really does seem like a cast that is particularly eager to tweet out the behind-the-scenes scoop, and that is always something that's going to terrify me.
Yeah, no, listen, it's easier said than done. I'm sure there's 20 things that, you know, you see a day. And also, like, the bigger problem is, like, don't at the players in your like, negative tweets or really anything that's not, like, straight facts or a compliment. Like, there's no reason. Like, they're people. It's like, would you – when you get added, unless you're, you know, Justin Bieber and you probably have, like, you know, if you have millions of followers, you probably have your notification shut off. Like, if you have 1,000 followers, which most of these people have – you probably get a notification every time someone tweets at you, meaning like you're essentially texting them because they're looking at their phone. You have their phone number and you're texting them this thing that you're adding them. Right. And it doesn't just go for Survivor, but it just in general, like anybody who's not famous, they're reading your tweets probably if they have, you know, five figure or less followers. Like, would you text a person this thing? Like, unless they're history's greatest monster, maybe don't, like, you know, badmouth them and at them, you know, at least subtweet them like a grown-up.
Exactly. And I think, unfortunately, the answer for most people is, yes, I would absolutely text this person this thing anonymously.
Yeah, sure.
And the anonymity, I think, is one of the major hang-ups in preventing this from getting – or in potentially swinging this kind of out of control in certain seasons. But hopefully making a mountain out of a molehill there. But to get back to just Wardog in general, he's very much impressed me to this point. And for someone who looks, sounds, and behaves as much like Tony Vlachos as he does, it is staggering to me that he's able to get away with this.
I mean, get away with what? Like, it's he hasn't made it to day 12 yet, you know? Like, who knows what he's getting away with? Like, yeah, I guess he got past two votes. That's something, right?
True. Okay. Yeah. I don't mean to count any chickens before they hatch or anything. You know, he could be one episode away from swapping horribly, but I was certainly expecting the Wardog.
Absolutely. I thought it'd be a train wreck also. Right. I agree. And by the way, nobody's ever been cast faster. Like, I have no doubt they saw this guy and they're like, ooh. I mean, he really looks a lot like Tony. Like, I Google imaged him, and, like, some of these pictures, it's like Tony if, you know, maybe it's Tony's first season if he had lost, like, 5 pounds. You know, it's really striking. Like, this – and he calls himself the War Dog. Like, this guy got cast in 10 seconds.
That's what I was going to say. I think he gets cast as Dan Da Silva. When they found out he calls himself the War Dog, that's it.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And then – the other newbie that I feel like I've seen enough of to potentially comment on briefly is Ron, who we saw pick up that advantage in the first episode, that kind of choose your own advantage that we haven't seen him make a decision on yet. And then this week we saw him kind of leading the dance party on the yellow team and just kind of generally keeping everyone in good spirits. Are you liking Ron to this point, Keith?
I'm fine with Ron. I mean, obviously you don't see that dance party if, you know, other than the fact that this tribe is not going to travel yet. And like, they just need to show something. And it was kind of a slow episode. I feel like 9 out of 10 episodes, like stuff like that, which probably happens all the time, just doesn't make it to air because it's not interesting enough. But like, you know, we talk about stretching the show this week. There's probably like 30 minutes of content, but they still needed 42. Ron, I think. I don't know. We might be seeing a lot of him like anyway, because, you know, he already has a Wikipedia page. Like, he's sort of famous. Like, he's way more famous than I thought. I feel like teachers like actually know who he is and have heard of him.
Yeah, I was surprised to learn, because, again, I came in essentially just like cold to the season premiere on any of these newbies. And I noticed that Ron has his own Wikipedia and a ton of Twitter followers and things of that nature. But I hadn't had any idea that it was affecting the game. Are we thinking that people out there potentially know who he is?
No, I can't imagine he gets recognized. Even if he does, he's a teacher. It's pretty easy to downplay. It's like, oh, if somebody's like, I go over to you, I'm like, hey, listen, Colin, this guy's a celebrity teacher. You'd be like, are you high? Like, there's no such thing as a celebrity
yeah,
teacher.
Yeah, there are zero celebrity teachers.
Like, is he like the main professor at like a Harvard Business School or something? Because if not, he's not famous.
Right. Yeah, we haven't even seen that much of Ron. I guess we were almost forced into seeing him when he came away with that advantage. But I thought he's been a ton of fun every time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And actually, incidentally, which direction do you think he should go with that advantage?
Okay, so the advantage is null and void after this coming episode, right?
I don't know. I still am not clear on if he needs to just choose which one he wants, or it needs to be played by the time.
I think it has to be played. Okay. I think they don't. I'm guessing, but they don't usually use language that vague, right? I assume it has to be played. So now the three advantages are regular immunity idol.
Correct. Steal a vote and steal a reward.
Because it's expiring, first of all, if you use it to steal a reward and. I mean, is there even like episode 3? Sometimes they don't even up to a reward challenge yet, right?
Well, I think you could lose the challenge, and the other team would keep the immunity, but you would get the reward.
Oh, well, right, because it comes in. Right. Okay. Fine. Well, at that point, you've lost the challenge. So if you steal the reward for a challenge you've lost, then you're going to tribal council. They should throw him in the ocean for being stupid, right?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Like, because he has lost
because
the challenge.
Because it goes with each other. Like, you already know that you've lost the challenge.
Right.
So now he can either use it as an immunity idol that you could just explain, hey, I found this. It's expiring. I have to play it. There's really nothing to discuss. And now I don't have it anymore. You could steal a vote, which, why? That'll make people more upset. Just play the stupid idol.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer now that he's made it through the first round and it's
right.
about
It was
to...
an interesting – it was. I mean, it wasn't even interesting. If you do the reward, to me, it's like – unless you think like, oh, I need to be so far under the radar and I'm not a threat, that playing an idol will make it seem like I'm a big threat. And also, like, smart players do know that, like, for whatever reason, finding an idol makes you 98% more likely to find a second idol in this game for very bizarre reasons. Mm-hmm. Maybe it could be logical in the fact that, like, if I was on 20 seasons, I would never find an idol because I can't find my shoes in my own room, you know? And there's probably people that are just good at finding things and people who aren't. But yeah, no, I think he has to, unless there's a crazy scenario where he can totally flip a vote by stealing a vote. And again, the first time they go to tribal, you have no idea where you stand, right? It's not like he's in some rocks out alliance that's been to tribal twice already. Am I crazy, or is there no other play other than just explaining that you have this, you found it, and it must be used right now? You could even show him the note if you're allowed to.
No, I think at this point that is the borderline mandatory move. Now that it expires this round, is show him the note. Hey, I've had this. I've never needed to use it because we keep winning everything. Now is the last chance I have. I'm going to take the idol. I'm going to play it tonight, and then I'm back to being a regular contestant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you have to do that.
Yeah. All right. So, Keeve, I guess anything else from this episode or from this Survivor season? I'm looking through the Wikipedia page just to make sure I'm not seeing any names that we are being egregious in skipping over. We've seen like a little bit again from Victoria, a little this week from Gavin. I guess we saw a lot from Chris this week, according to Twitter. But anyone else that we're being criminal and overlooking?
We haven't talked about Eric, but I don't think there's anything to really talk about yet. Aurora, we haven't really hit, but there's just a couple people on Kama that have just, you know, by next week, I'm sure you could, you know, unless they win again.
Yeah.
I guess they're definitely not switching after two, right? Because we probably would have seen that in the next week.
I suspect we would have seen that in the next time on Survivor. So I'm planning on them sticking it out in these tribes, probably through four episodes.
Oh, you mean they're happy with Joe being at no threat to go to tribal council? That's a shocker.
Yeah. All right. So, Keeve, I guess, while I have you on the Survivor record, do you have a winner pick for this season yet?
I didn't have a preseason winner pick. I'm debating between picking sort of my favorite of the four. I mean, it's really crazy because there's only, you know, 12 newbies left.
Yeah.
I'm vacillating between, I'm going to knock out the Erics and the Auroras and the people we've seen so little of. Like, I can't remember a time we saw nothing of somebody for two episodes to start the show who won. Like, we've seen it with the Tinas of the world for one episode, but not with two. Victoria. I'm going to lean towards newbie over returner, and I'm going to go, because she has such a great episode this week, with Lauren O'Connell.
Okay, I like that pick. I am also, at this point, leaning newbie over returner, and through two episodes, I still feel the best about Rick, so I'll stick with that.
Yeah, Rick was really my other consideration, and then like sort of deciding between like Aubrey or Kelly Wentworth as sort of like who could win. I mean, also there's sort of the meta conversation of like, does the show hate this season? I don't see any evidence like that the show is unhappy with this season outside of the game, right? Like, do you?
No, I don't think so.
And like, is there any reason to think that like, or other than just general like nervousness, is there any reason to think that someone's going to come back from Redemption Island or whatever, Edge of Extinction, and then win?
The only reason that I think that's such a distinct possibility is because that person is potentially quite likely to be Joe Anglim, who is very good at running the table and challenges.
True, but I also – I don't know how – like, is – I mean, this is so early and absurd to say, but, like is he definitely going to win a vote? Like, we make it seem like – yeah, he's unstoppable maybe in terms of, like, as a force in the game and an individual challenge. But, like, is this social game so on point that in a final three he's definitely going to be more popular than two more people if he's been voted out? Like, these aren't dummies. Like, we're not – right? We shouldn't treat them like babies. Like, they're also going to have this idea of, like, you played once and you got eliminated, you know, 3 days ago.
Right. I agree. It's certainly not a foregone conclusion that Joe's just going to sweep any jury vote he
ever
touches.
How about this? If you were out there, if a game bot was out there, should they automatically say, I will not vote for somebody. I don't care if it's somebody who like insulted my family, who kicked me, who stole all my rice. Like, I will not vote for somebody who came back from an elimination.
So for me personally, I cannot conceive of what it would take for me to vote for someone who was eliminated and then.
What if it was your best friend in the game, though? What if it's like the other two people you detest? And this is, I mean, you might not even know the people. Like, who knows? Like, it's, we're going to have a scenario where like people don't know each other, basically, who are voting for. Right.
That's
almost a lock. Will be people on the jury who have never met. Which I think we had in Heroes Villains, but they had, you know, they were returning players, so they could have been friends in real life. I don't remember who it was.
Yeah, Coach and Courtney never played with some of them.
Never
the finalists were villains that they had played with. And I think similar things happened in, like, Cook Islands or whatever. But, yes, what I was going to say is Joe potentially coming in off Edge of Extinction, or anyone coming in off Edge of Extinction, could have a huge advantage if we have a jury full of people who've been there since day 3, day 6, day 9, never met the other people they're in the finals with, and Joe has spent the last month buttering them up.
Providing for them also.
Right.
Like, he shows up and, like, he builds them a Hilton when they've been, you know, starving to death. By the way, and when you're not in the game, and one of the dangerous things is, like, me and you are on Edge of Extinction. We know that only one of us is getting back in the game. So I can be true to you, right? I can say, like, because there's no alliance. Like, one of us is winning a competition. There's no reason for me to lie to you.
Right.
Right?
No, yeah, absolutely.
So I can say, like, listen, hey, I will go fishing, but you have to promise, like, you'll vote for me, right? And there's no reason for the person to, like, you know, like, at this point, that person has no stake because you can't both be playing Survivor again, right? Like, unless they're saying two people come back, at which point, like, then we really riot. Like, there's no – that is sort of a flaw in the system where you have people who are essentially out of the game and knowing that we can't both be back in the game, so I have no reason to, like, actually play Survivor.
Right, which leads me back to my initial question of at what point does a twist fundamentally alter the entire premise of the game?
Right, so now we're just speculating. I think we'll be able to answer that in, like, 6 weeks when we see what's actually going on. Like, there's probably scenarios that we haven't even thought of yet. Like what we just, you know, are talking about now that are going to be even more upsetting.
Yeah. Well, excited, I guess, to see how all of Edge of Extinction.
Listen, at least we've seen everything 10 times. So even if it sucks, at least it's something new.
Like, that's a good point.
You know, yeah.
All right. So, Keeve, I think that is going to essentially wrap us up on Survivor. And I do want to, while you're here, get your takes on, as mentioned, MTV's The Challenge, which for my money may be the best show currently airing on TV. I know not everyone who has made it this far is a Challenge viewer, and I'm guessing people may be tuning out. So take this opportunity to give the first set of plugs for where people can find you and everything you're doing.
Okay. Rob Has a Podcast. I assume 100% of your listeners know what that is, right?
Yeah, 110% of our listeners know what that is.
Rob and I started a show like 6 months ago called Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, where we listeners send in ideas, and then if we like an idea, we put it on a wheel, and then every week at the end of the episode, we say, hey, which idea are we going to do next week? We spin the wheel, and whatever that lands on, we will do. So, for example, we have set all of our listeners up on blind dates. We'll watch a random episode of a television show, which is always the third season and seventh episode of a television show. We'll have an expert on Harry Potter come in and explain Harry Potter to us, or Rob explain Star Wars to me. Things like that. Every week it's a completely different podcast, so if you're not interested in what we did the week before, unless you hate us, in which case the show is definitely not for you, like, you could always skip one and then come in the next week. And then on my other podcast is 32 Fans, where 6 months a year, my friend Alex Chester and I talk about football. But in the football offseason, we sort of just make brackets and rank arbitrary things like the greatest and worst living American or our 100 favorite TV shows or movies. A lot of rankings and lists in podcast form.
Yeah, Plain Cheerios making the final four of the cereal tournament is still a thorn in my paw.
I mean, we did a cereal, for people who don't know what you're talking about, we did a cereal tournament in person where I bought 32 boxes of cereal. We invited over a bunch of friends and we did a NCAA tournament style bracket where we ate cereals. I mean, one guy literally ate 62 bowls of cereal. He ate every matchup. Not a joke, not exaggerating. There were times where we would be up to like the eighth matchup and he was still eating the cereal the sixth matchup because like he needed to. I insisted that we just have each person has like I bought enough bowls that like everyone could just use 62 different bowls. But all of a sudden, everyone became like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Like, no, 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 it's not environmentally friendly. So you need to use the same one plastic bowl for all 62 bowls of cereal. So, yeah. But in terms of, yeah, Honeycomb's faced up with Cheerios. It's one of the most upsetting things that's really happened to me these last few years, that Cheerios beat Honeycomb's, which is probably my favorite cereal. Tainted the whole thing, but honestly, that's, you know, if you're going to listen to one episode, if that sounds interesting, that's the cereal tournament on the chance. It's one of the most fun things I've ever done in my
life.
And
actually, if I may recommend one particular episode of Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, one of my favorite podcasts in years was Conspirapod, where you had Antonio on to talk about some of the all-time great conspiracy theories. That was a ton of fun, and I think any listener of this podcast would enjoy that style of conversation for sure. Leave it. Let me tell you why you would like RHAP. You should give that fledgling upstart a chance instead of just spending all your time with us. Actually,
would I like that Antonio is on a first name. He's like Madonna here. Like, you don't even have to say Antonio Bizarro. Like, people just know his last name in this universe.
I don't know how many Antonios there are.
I'm sure there are people who don't know who it is.
Yeah, I'm sure that was not a 100% registration rate.
There are you probably have some listeners who have never heard of Rob as a podcast. It might be like one. I don't know how many listeners have. It could be 100, but like, maybe, you know, maybe people just found you. Like, I like Survivor. I'm going to iTunes search Survivor 6 years ago, and this is their podcast. They don't know anything else, you know, about the internet, Survivor internet, except for Dom and Colin.
I think the shot we have on that front is with the people who just got into us because of Jeopardy, who also happened to watch Survivor.
Oh, okay. Oh, because, yeah, okay. Or some other show that you covered once or twice.
Right,
and it's
right.
Like, or like Korean-speaking genius fans who, like, you came to for your genius content and never
even
left.
Even most of those people, I'm sure, have heard of RHAP.
They've moved over.
Yeah. Well, just on air, along the conspiracy pod lines, I want to put my own take on the record out there publicly about one of the stories you covered, and that is Michael Jordan was 100% banned from basketball. There is not even a conspiracy. It is a conspiracy, but there's no doubt about it. That happened.
There's like, everything is so meta now. Like, the commissioner of the NBA literally just did like an onstage podcast with Bill Simmons this weekend, where Bill Simmons openly said to his face, like a similar conspiracy that, like, because there was tampering, people won't know what we're talking about, but I'll just speak in general terms. There was a really good player named Paul George, and he was under contract, and a team that you've probably heard of, even if you know what I'm talking about, the Los Angeles Lakers, were trying to get him to sign up with them when he was still under contract. And Bill Simmons accused the commissioner to his face in public of basically saying, like, hey, you weren't allowed to, you didn't let them sign that player because they had initiated contact too early. Like, imagine, like, if this was 1995 and you're just saying it to David Stern's face about Michael Jordan, you could almost like know the answer by looking at his face. You're talking about billion-dollar organizations. Like, some of these people are good, but ultimately, like, they could kill someone and you'd never know. So, like, right. The fact that, like, they're suspending a guy, it's not even that hot of a take, even though it's Michael Jordan, like a global icon. Like, it's possible. Like, what's in it for him to admit that he was suspended and look stupid?
Right. My take is there's no doubt about it. That's what happened. I don't even think that's...
You're saying it's like not even a conspiracy. It's just obvious.
Yeah.
It's his Wikipedia page because it's a fact.
Right. Exactly. All right, Keeve. So let's dive into a little bit on MTV's The Challenge. We did a draft preview podcast here on the Dom and Colin Network. And we've covered it the last few seasons, but this is the first I've gotten to talk about it, you know, actually seeing this season play out. And I have been really loving it. We at least touched on earlier, it seems like the budget, or at least the set design, has gone substantially up, particularly this season. But not just that, it seems like the format and the kind of balance, I feel like, that has been... relative balance that has been achieved within the house. And it's no longer the Johnny Bananas steamrolls his way to victory 6 challenges in a row kind of dynamic. I think that is really hitting its stride right about now. Now that we're injecting these Big Brother players and UK players and a lot more of the old guard are done coming back. Keeve, what have you been making so far of this season of The Challenge? Are you as into it as I am?
Absolutely. I think that you're right. I think what happened was I loved the last few seasons, but at a certain point, it is the same thing. Like season 30, season 31, season 32, which were a trilogy, right? Like, they had almost the exact same people in all of them. They started bringing in non-canonical MTV people, right? Like people from outside of the Big Brother, from the real world, Road Rules, Are You the One sort of family. and started bringing Big Brother people, a couple UK people. But now the dam has been broken this season to the point where, well, number one, there's no feeder system anymore, right? Real World, I think, is coming back on Facebook, but no one's going to watch it and it's going to go away.
Really? I didn't even know that.
It's coming back on Facebook soon. I think they're doing a vote right now for, like, who should the seventh cast member be. I know that because Facebook probably, you know, listens to our conversations. So when I got a DM from you talking about the challenge, like, my next ad was about that Real World thing on Facebook.
That happens to me constantly. I'll be on an entirely different platform.
Yes. Yeah, it's insane. Because I, like, would, there's no way I would have seen it. Nobody tweeted about it, but it was like the top of my Facebook page, this ad. Like, hey, vote for the seventh person in the Real World house.
Well, let's just laugh that one off and not ever be concerned about what that means about our future.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's too late at this point. I said this, but my wife is one of those people. She puts a like tape over her computer, like over her laptop.
Oh, the so camera. Nobody,
like, Mark. By the way, you know who else famously does that? Mark Zuckerberg, which is like a cannibal, like, you know, not wanting to watch a meat eating like video. It doesn't make any sense. So I think they did a very necessary shakeup this season. I will say they probably went a little bit too far because there are just so many British people that they're introducing. And there's like, I think, 34 people to start the show. That, you know, you and I were joking before we went on air about Survivor, like, hey, we don't know a couple of these people at all. Like, there are people who haven't spoken yet on the challenge. Like, there's people whose voice we don't know what it sounds like yet.
Right. The first time I heard JP talk was when he was picking CT for the challenge.
Right. And right. And that makes sense because he's literally already gone. Natalie Negrete from Big Brother is gone. And I don't believe she spoke before she left, which is funny because last season it seemed like, oh, she's going to be like the new, like almost the female Bananas. Like, she's the female star who's going to be on the next six seasons. I still think that will happen. But she had a real, you know, just non-event of a season.
I would say Cam is the front runner to be the female Bananas who's on for
six. There's 15 for one of the beauties of the show is, especially when they're doing large casts like this, is like, if you want to see somebody, like, and it becomes apparent that everyone wants to see them, like, they'll just be back, which is why this is Bananas, like, eighth or ninth season in a row, because, you know, like, people want to see him, there's a spot for him, we're just going to keep, you know, keep bringing him back. I one of the things that's so fascinating is that this is really a season like last season, which went on for, I think, 4 years. You know, even if you got eliminated in episode six, you were on TV for months. It's not even a joke, right? Like, because most episodes didn't even have an elimination. Whereas they got three episodes out of Bananas, and the first one didn't even really have, an actual elimination. So yeah, he's almost a second boot, which means because he's been on the show 8 years in a row and he's never been eliminated anywhere close to this early in that run, is that they essentially have a Bananas-less season where, like, a new leader has to step up. Not that he hasn't won anything in a while. But he's won one of those seasons, right? But, like, someone here is gonna have to take all the confessionals. Someone here is gonna have to be the focal point of the show. We don't know who it is yet, but it's almost refreshing to have no Bananas, even though I don't dislike him personally.
Right, I find him very entertaining, and I'm always happy that
he should be on every season, and then he should find some sort of epic blindside, and that's really how it's supposed to be. Like, he should be there. He is the best sort of in-game, like, confessional person on any of these shows not in terms of like over-the-top entertainment, but like actually explaining what's going on, right? He's the master. There's nobody as good as he is in terms of just, like, he knows exactly what the producers want. He essentially is a producer on the show, though. Like, he gets paid to be there more than, like, probably most of the executive producers get paid at this point. Like, his appearance fee, like, imagine if Jeff Probst gave Boston Rob like $200,000. It's like, you're going to be on every season, and we're going to pay you no matter if you come out, you know, first or last.
Right. Well, I think Bananas is essentially experiencing what Boston Rob probably understands he would experience if he went back to Survivor again, mm-hmm. which is, you know, Bananas dominated this franchise for so long that now that his automatic allies that he had for all of those years aren't part of the regular cast every single time.
Because they're in old age homes, yeah.
Right, yeah, exactly. This is a much harder battle, and I think a huge reason why the challenge works so much better than Survivor could ever dream of working in terms of bringing a lot, you know, the idea of bringing someone back every single season in a row for Survivor is insane to me and should never be
unthinkable.
It should never be attempted, because at a certain point, anyone who reaches that level of notoriety or popularity within the franchise would just always be an early boot, or at the very least never come close to being allowed to win a game like Survivor, where it is just other people deciding who they want to be around. Whereas at least in the challenge, you can get away with this because as badly as people may have wanted Bananas gone early for the years before this, they at least had to beat him and do so. Other than just enough people wanting him gone was not all it took to get rid of him. You still had to defeat him at things.
Yeah, it makes sense. One of the interesting things about the challenge, which only works a little bit on a show like Survivor, is every time you're on the show, if your name isn't like CT or Johnny Bananas, or really Jenna has been on every, other than the one I think she got injured, she's been on every season for a long time. If you're on the bubble, you really have to bring the crazy or win, you know, do something really memorable, because their pool is so deep because it's infinite, right? The list of shows they've taken people from, just reading from Wikipedia: X on the Beach UK, Floribama Shore, Are You the One, Big Brother, Jordy Shore, Real World Las Vegas. That's like the first six people, not one of them from the same show. Survivor Turkey, Love Island, The Bachelorette, telenovelas, that's not even a show. That's like a concept. there's almost nobody here. There's virtually nobody here other than like Paulie and Natalie, and I guess, and like the Nolan twins and stuff, who are even like originally from the same show. So the list is endless. They could just take anybody on earth at this point. So if you're not a big name, like if there's someone who comes back once and is a dud, maybe an early boot, minor injury, something, or especially a first timer, like you're just never getting to sniff the challenge again.
Oh, I think the clearly correct thing to do, if it is your first season on the challenge, is to hook up with a returnee or fight with a returnee.
I get pregnant. You have to hook up with a big name, which is, I mean, I'm sure the girls are fighting with, I mean, they say it, like, you literally, have people, you know, like, openly, like, sort of flirting with Bananas, who clearly don't like him.
Right.
You know, like, yeah, like, they're literally, like, openly just in a showmance, some seasons. This time he wasn't around long enough, even. But definitely hook up with, like, Bananas or CT or one of those people, or, start like a major fight that doesn't lead to like fisticuffs, because then you're gone and you probably aren't coming back.
I don't know. I feel like fighting and getting thrown out
on sometimes. Well, also it's like there's different levels. Like they have to know they could trust you not to murder somebody. Like there's a reason why like Hurricane Naya, you know, doesn't come back, or not to mention like the guys who like actually like legally can't come back.
Right. But, well, you know, didn't CT get kicked out of a ton of his early challenges for hitting people?
It's not a death sentence, but my point is it's so competitive now. Like, if you're getting kicked out, I would do it at the end. You know, get kicked out in episode five. Not in two, especially if it's your first time out there. I mean, and also just the fight for airtime is so fierce. One weird thing is, and I really don't know much about the season, is it true that this is a much more truncated season than the last one?
Yes, this is only going to be a 13-episode season.
So, I actually don't like that. If I'm being negative, like, I do love this season. I think it's going to be amazing. But this is almost like a meat and potatoes. We're going to focus on the challenges, because that's almost not enough. Like last season was 40 episodes and that was maybe like 20 too many. But that means like there's probably insane things happening back at the house and there's just no room, because we're just doing, you know, challenge, the whole thing where like the tribunal, and then we're going to the elimination floor, the killing floor or whatever. Like there's not or we already had a double boot in episode four. We lost more people at this point than we did by, you know, last season. Month six, like, you know, it's a little bit rushed. That's my one major critique.
I would agree that it is not quite as much challenge as I would want. But I would say, I mean, this is totally unrealistic, but I do think I would enjoy 13 90-minute episodes.
Yeah, that's fair. 100%. It should be 13 90-minute episodes. This show is meant to be a 90-minute show, because that means every single episode there's an elimination. You can have all the drama you want. You can play with the format once in a while if like you need to, where maybe one episode doesn't end with an elimination, but then you can't get on this track where like last season where they're lost, like one episode ends with elimination, then you don't even see a challenge the next episode, right? And then like the third episode has the challenge, the fourth episode has the elimination, but then they rush it. Like I think this is a 90-minute show. Again, maybe if you were dealing with like, you know, if it was on Netflix, maybe it's a 75-minute show is like the true answer. I don't know.
It's somewhere in that ballpark for me. Yeah. I think you're right. That's where this show should be.
But there's never seen on the show that's like, oh, that's boring. Like, there is sometimes even Survivor will have it's only 2 minutes, but sometimes they're like, oh, that's kind of that, you know, they could have cut that in a more interesting week. There's really very little boring things that are happening because, again, they have 34 people in the house. Like, there's always going to be something they could explore, even if it doesn't lead to anything. The issue is, though, like, it becomes a much different show when there's 12 people left. Like, there's not a lot of hookups and drama because those people have been sort of weeded out.
Right. And I do agree with that, that it is extremely rare to be watching any part of an episode of The Challenge and be bored, because there are certainly always a lot of exciting things going on either in the house or, you know, on the challenge kind of battlefield. But to go back to that, at least the last trilogy where we were really getting like one elimination every three episodes, as interesting as all of the scene by scene stuff was in isolation, altogether it really felt like it was dragging to me, just having
it was
that
dragging.
Long.
Also, as the listeners, we're so conditioned, we want to be able to trust that like there's a format. We're going to end the show with an elimination. And that's why Survivor, you know, even though I'm sure people have said, hey, that would be cool if maybe, you know, we just got, you know, opened up with one big episode and no one goes home, so we really get to know people. Like, no, people need a beginning, middle, and end to the story. And you know, this year they're doing that. I don't know. I do think the sweet spot's somewhere between last season and this season.
Yeah, I'm with that for sure. What do you think about essentially having this fresh meat concept back, although not in title this time, I suppose? But mm-hmm. We have half the cast is totally new players, and we have them picking their own vets to be their partners. Are you a fan of this kind of format?
Yeah, I mean, I like it because, one, it shows – it's very interesting that the producers will allow the players to pick their partner because, again, a show like Survivor Big Brother, which really likes to be the puppet master, would – you know, they used to do that, but they have not done that in a long time, right? We don't really see swaps that are a contestant-led or, you know, picking – or, like, let the person who lost the challenge or won the challenge pick a tribe.
I think the Bone was the last time that they did.
Yeah. So I love it because it shows, like – it actually shows respect for the players and the viewers, right? Like, that it's like, hey, you know, we're not – we don't care. And listen, Johnny Benaz went home week three. They could have – and by the way, if you were the type of person who said, like, no, they were devastated. They lost CT last week. They could have easily – the second CT gets picked, they could say, like, oh, no, there's a fourth person in this challenge. And then two people go home and two people stay, raising his chances of staying to 50% from 33%, right?
Right.
Allison Grodner does that immediately.
Right. Because they've announced it's a double elimination, but they haven't told us how.
He did not. I mean, maybe he told them. I doubt it. But he certainly didn't tell us.
Right.
And it's by the way, it is a good selling point. You could say, like, all the giants have been slain. Ashley, by the way, I love that. And Ashley is a giant. She is – one, she feels like she's 6'5", even though I think she's a normal size, like, you know, regular average, like, 5'7" person or something, 5'8". Like, she feels on the show like she is like a, you know, a female sort of, you know, CT. And then she's just bigger than a lot of the other people. Mm. Not this season, but –
I mean, she's got a much bigger bank account than any other challenge contestant.
I would say that's mostly gone already, if I had to guess. Do you? Are
she's
you
she's
real
won like
world...
$1.5 million or something.
Colin, are you a Real World fan?
I am not.
So did you? So what I Bill Simmons always used to call the Real World. He would say he watched it, but literally the same way he'd watch like the Red Sox AAA team to see who's going to be in the pros next year.
I see.
Would say it's like so. But I was originally a Real World fan to the point where I've seen, I think, every Real World season. There was a couple that I only was in and out on the middle. But I was like not watching some of the early challenges.
Okay.
And then I came to the challenge later. But I watched every Real World season, even the last few, which were like objectively awful TV. Like just and you know that because none of those people ever made it out here. But my point is Ashley, who was on Explosion, which is when they had already messed with the format and they were talking, they had broken the third wall or the fourth wall or whatever, the fifth wall, I think even at that point. And they were, you know, they were showing the cameraman in every scene and they were bringing in people every week and doing twists. Ashley, I believe, and I should have asked one of, do you have any like challenge stats people? I should have asked one of them.
I'm sure Liguori or Scally knows all of her stats.
Yeah, I should have asked Matt Liguori. I think Ashley is the least served cast member, full cast member in the history of the Real World. She was eliminated in episode three. She was kicked out of the house for drinking in episode three. And it was probably like day three because she was such a nightmare like that, you know, that they just like all skewed it towards the beginning. And also the show left when she was like moving to France and never being seen again. So like the idea that she was even on television for another week, she was probably the least likely challenger because it wasn't like a super – like she was sort of interesting, but she got kicked out of the house. Like one of the least likely people to even make the challenge ever. So the fact that she's, you know, now this like, you know, the bigger than like Cara Maria and some of these like iconic females is absolutely amazing. And
it's so is she the Kelly Wentworth where it's just a surprise that she was even back in the conversation?
Not even Kelly Wentworth. She's like – I'm trying to like
– Francesca?
Yeah, Francesca had only been booted once and then became like the new Boston Rob or something.
That's
at least being booted twice is like a fun fact. Like here, it's like she was on the show for 2 weeks. One of the other fun things, if you want a little real world history, Jenna was not even on the Real World. She was the what was her dude's name? Short guy who like it was insane that she was with.
I do not. Jay in her first season.
Yeah. So she was like his ex-girlfriend. And she was – and then, like, she was on that show for, like, 10 minutes. She was on The Real World for, like, parts of like, a couple episodes. And now she's literally, like, their mainstay.
Oh, in my mind, I had always – and I knew that I was wrong for doing this. But I had always thought that Jenna and Kayla and one other girl in that kind of group all came from Are You the One? And I keep having to get corrected on that not being true.
There's – how about this? There's almost nobody from any of The Real World left. It's Jenna. It's Ashley, Nani, who at this point is essentially like from the challenge, Wes, who is, you know, from an old season, Bananas, who, you know, like there are people on his, you know, he's from 20 years ago, Leroy, Leroy and Nani, I believe, were on the same season, and CT and Zach.
That's wild.
That is the entire, and Cara Maria is from a Fresh Meat season.
So are we at the point with the people who've been eliminated? It's got to be close. Yeah, we've lost Bananas and CT as Real World alumni. Are we at the point where there are fewer Real World players than there are for the field?
They started with fewer, and most of them are gone.
That's wild.
It was like seven or eight.
Not just Real World, but MTV people.
MTV. I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't know because I don't watch Are You the One. There aren't a lot. The thing about when they just decided, hey, we're going to bring in Are You the One because the talent pool dried up because there was no more Real World, and they had a couple seasons where like the people were like loathsome and or just boring.
Yeah, and also just not prepared. It seemed like to me.
Yeah. So the Are You the One? Cam is from Are You the One? That's a hit.
Devin is Devin from Are You the One?
I don't remember because again I don't watch it. Hunter is from Are You the One? That's definitely a hit. Amanda, but that's like a lot of them were misses. And if you remember they were really shown the door right away. It was like, hey, we're not going to let them, the Are You the One people, like make it because this is a Real World only show, the challengers only. So they were really constantly being booted. Right.
I do every in the like late 20s, early 30s, the Are You the One kids would show up and just be the first four boots every time.
Just like literally like lunch meat for like the bananas of the world.
That was what I was alluding to when like the balance just seemed totally off, where everyone was just on board to boot whoever the new players were. And then Bananas and his first cousin would spend the entire season without touching an elimination.
Right. Yeah. But what's funny is it's the opposite now. Like Bananas will come back next season and he has no allies. Like you could bring back Leroy, who's an actual ally. Maybe you can make up with Zach. Who knows how much of that was sort of Bananas always just trying to manufacture 10 more feuds for the next season. Cause he is truly the master of like having a storyline with everybody and trying to keep it straight. And you don't know if it's real or not.
I mean, if Bananas can get Zach as a partner and they can rekindle their relationship, that's a pretty ridiculous team.
But you'd have to think that they're going to have to stack. I'm sure they're happy with Bananas going home early once. You'd have to think. And by the way, maybe there's 13 episodes because like some sort of what we were talking about with Survivor 4, maybe they're like, all right, well they weren't happy with the end game, or the end game is a bunch of British people who nobody knows, and which I mean everyone left is a British person, nobody knows, so that's very possible. And then it's like, all right, well we're gonna cut the short, and we are literally always either airing or filming a challenge season. Like season 34, I don't follow this stuff. Like I'm sure they're either casting for it or it's already happened or something.
Right. I don't think it's happened yet, but I'm sure everyone's already jockeying for a position to get on that cast.
Well, imagine, because you know, like the once every 10 seasons when Survivor does a full, you know, bring back 18 or 20 people, how like fierce that gets.
Right.
So imagine that, but with people on steroids. Like that's how the challenge must
And people who have absolutely no qualms about airing as much dirty laundry and receipt lists as possible.
It's a good point. It's so fascinating because Survivor really is like the masters, if you follow golf, of the reality TV shows, because I like most of the people on Survivor, I would like bring home to, you know, like hang out with, like show my parents for dinner.
Yeah.
Right? Because I feel like people are classy. They
I like where this is going. This is a great parallel.
Classy people. Like everyone on Survivor, I would be pretty much outside like one or two whack jobs per season. Like I'm not sure I would let the war dog in. I'd have to think about that. But like Big Brother, none of them. I would never let someone from Big Brother
in. No. Because,
like, have some scam. They would just take our stuff probably. They would try and hook my parents in some fake charity. The challenge is like you have to be – it's somewhere – I don't know if it's above Big Brother. Obviously, there are a lot of Big Brother people, and they sort of fit right in. There are some nutty people. Oh, yeah, and you want to watch nutty people on TV. You don't want to watch a bunch of normal people necessarily. Like Survivor, the game is the star, not necessarily the people, which is why they don't bring people back. But, yeah, no, I don't know. There's like – you see the social media behavior of some of these people, and it's like, all right, that's not ideal.
Yeah, but I mean, I think they are obviously to a great extent, many of them are just kind of off their rocker, but yeah. I also think they're absolutely aware that this is a show that explicitly flags up Twitter beef as a reason to pair people together. And like,
no, sometimes they will literally, it's canon. Whatever happens on Twitter is canon right. In the history of the show. Like, they'll show it, like, someone will be a rival and like, that person has never been on a season. Well, one time they sent a mean DM and he screenshot it, so.
No. I don't remember. What season it was, because this was right before I started watching again regularly, but Bananas, I think, got his big kind of come up with Twitter beef with Frank, and then they won a season together, and that like ushered in the Bananas era.
So I may go back to the Sarah well next season. Maybe it's like, you know, some sort of rivals, and it's like Bananas and Sarah.
Sarah's coming back ever?
I don't think so. No, I don't.
She's
think
done.
So.
Yeah, I think Bananas
said in an interview recently that she's like she's well, like her husband's wealthy or something like that. She doesn't need to come back.
I think a big element in Bananas making that decision. Not that I think he would have potentially.
Yeah, he said it. I think he said it to Bill Simmons at the time.
What's that?
I think he said it to Bill Simmons at the time, even that when he went on right afterwards. That like she didn't need the money.
Oh, what I was going to say is I think him knowing that if I take this money from Sarah. She is never going to come back on the challenge. I'm never going to have to answer for this.
Oh, double incentive, you're saying.
Yeah.
Kill two birds and make $500,000
right,
or whatever.
It was. Yeah, it like adds to.
People won like 20 grand 4 years ago on this show. That's now somehow giving away $1 million.
Well, actually, I don't know if I like or dislike the prize structure of only first place is getting paid just because – it does seem pretty unfair to the people who come close, but I would say one of the massive things Big Brother has going for it is everyone knowing that only the top two places are going to get prize money beyond the jury stipend, and the money is so meaningful for people that really does change their priorities and force them absolutely. To play a little harder for the win. And unfortunately, I think on Big Brother, we now see so many people, like they're casting out of a pool of people for whom just getting the jury stipend is life-changing money for them, and they play for that instead.
Yeah, play. Oh yeah, they'd rather be in the jury. You don't have to be on TV. You could hook up or be by the pool all day, and like, it's right. There are people who are drawing dead from day one on the challenge, but that's like because of God, right? That's because they're just not strong enough. Like it's not because they're not trying. I feel there are very few people who. I mean, your strategy could be to float. To make it to the end and win. But there are very few people who are just happy to be there and not trying to win. It's really, especially, and this is why I think we both love this season, it just feels like an all-star game. Even though we haven't seen half these people before, it feels like, I mean, some of these people are like, feel like I'm convinced that, you know, the Turbos and the Bears and some of these guys, like, especially, what's her name? Maddie. Like, they should all be in, like, the NFL or, like, the WNBA. Like, these people, like, there's no way you couldn't put them in a 40 now and they'd be, like, blowing the linebackers out of the water.
Yeah, I mean, Belichick has been scouting Maddie since Floribama Shore.
It is true. Like, Maddie, like, she went in there and it was just, like, they didn't even know what to do. It was, like, this is a new evolution. I don't know how you can
– Maddie is playing with cheat codes.
But that's good. You want sort of a giant who might maybe has to be slayed.
Like, yeah, no, it is good. I mean, she's not alone. I mean, I think like Cam could certainly put up a challenge to Maddie in any kind of physical
competition.
Right,
there's not one dominant person, but that's what makes it. I mean, and also like you know, God bless, like, Josh from Big Brother, people like that who are just, you know, I'm sure he could kick our asses, but, like, I don't know how he's going to fare with some of these people who've been, you know, like, working out 8 hours a day for 7 years for this opportunity.
That was the example that came to mind when you were talking about some people are just happy to be there. I feel like Josh Martinez is just happy to be there, and he
That's
is not.
True. Under... That's true. But yeah. Like, listen, he's been happy to be there and won before, right?
Yeah. If anyone can win on accident, it's Josh Martinez.
So it's like it's possible. And also, like, I don't know. I don't know. I have seen Josh in person. I don't remember how big he was.
He was up there. I mean, he's my
size. He's a big
guy.
Like, yeah, he might not be, you know, 6'7 and 260, but none of these guys. That's why, like, a guy like Jay, the guy who we mentioned briefly before, who was Jenna's boyfriend, like, he's just not big enough. Like, it's not reasonable to have somebody, you know, you like, I could be the world's best TV, or you could be, like, well, you're a lot bigger than me. Like, I could be the world's TV. I just can't get cast on a show like this. It's not for people who are. Who are, like, not gigantic at this point.
Right. I've also encountered Josh in person. I'm gonna put Josh, as someone who is 6'3", 195. I'm gonna put Josh
right.
at.
Oh, but he's not right. I mean,
I'm gonna put Josh right at where I am. I'm gonna put him right in that ballpark, either plus or minus an inch, plus or minus 10 pounds.
Yeah. Well, I got more pounds on you guys, but definitely not the height.
One thing I wanted to hit on that I forgot about when we were talking about just the format for this season, the fresh meat format, and actually this could tie back into the Conspirapod. One theory that I really liked, I heard from Brian Scally. I loved in the premiere that the new players were the ones who got to draft the vets, as everyone was spending the whole time thinking the vets would pick the new players. However, it didn't occur to me that maybe this was an audible that got called after Cara Maria finished so poorly among the vets, and they wanted to make sure she got a good partner.
I love the way he's thinking. I love it. And also, like, wasn't somebody eliminated for not getting picked?
I think only newbies were eliminated.
Right. Yeah, but we also don't know why that was. Like, that may have been there may have sort of been some rule change to save somebody. First of all, I love the thinking. I love the sort of the conspiracy level thing. It's not a conspiracy when it's reality TV. Like, there's, you know, the answer is usually in real life, I believe no conspiracy theories, and on reality TV, you could convince me of almost anything.
That's right. There really is no such thing as a reality TV conspiracy theory, but I loved that idea, and I would absolutely buy that could be what happened once they saw how that played out, because I would imagine Cara is someone MTV feels particularly invested in. And, like, if we want to think about who the kind of female analog to Bananas is at this point, it certainly has to be Cara, right? She's someone who's been on probably at least 7 of the last 8 seasons.
Yeah, probably slightly overrated also from a physical standpoint at this point, right? I think she's somewhere in the middle. By the way, Bananas, like, went down and he's done poorly in the eliminations, but he's still, like, regular challenge in and out is actually pretty good. Like, he frequently wins or is a top three finisher. So I don't
think he's good in the regular challenges.
Some of these challenges, he's just like, and again, he's got so many reps at some of these games and stuff.
Right.
But, like, he is, you know, he's not a big guy compared to these guys, but he's actually good. Yeah, Camarilla, it's a good comp. She's got this relationship with Nell. I don't follow any of these people on social media, literally none of them. So I don't know where that is. Like, if that's going to something that's going to be able to buy her another season, because clearly that's sort of leading her along. I do think, like, someone like Cameron probably nearing the end of her reign. Right? Doesn't it feel like that? Like, as long as this relationship's going, maybe not. But then after that, I feel like that might be the end of her storyline.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but I really hope it's getting close to the end of the Cara Maria storyline, just because I was someone who was a huge Cara fan for so many seasons. I was very excited that she won. Two seasons ago. Last season, Ashley took the money from Hunter. But Cara got the individual win 2 seasons ago. And even at that point, I was still into her. And prior to that, had been a huge Cara fan when she was more of an underdog, I suppose. But ever since Polly has come on to this show, Cara Maria sucks on here, it seems like. I cannot believe I'm saying this, but Cara is, without a doubt, one of my least favorite characters on the show at this point, and I'm very ready for
her
to
be. But that's partially,
done.
Like, guilty by association, because you're just naturally inclined to hate Polly. Polly was the last season of Big Brother. I saw a little bit of 19, but his season of 18 that I mostly watched. I mean, he's just such a thoroughly unlikable person that it's brilliant TV.
Right. And I think it's so brilliant and it clearly works on me. Like, he is having the intended effect, but what irritates me so much about it was so clear during Big Brother 18 that he was this irredeemable douchebag, and right. It's painful
to me. So crazy because his brother was, like, almost too normal to be
right,
on the show.
Right, but it's painful to me that he is essentially getting his way and getting this platform to essentially...
Life is just, not fair, Colin. It's not fair.
By virtue of being so terrible, he thinks he is crushing.
Are you talking about
Paulie
or, like... politicians, like,
yeah,
it's true. It's like, yeah, the person, yeah, he sucks up all the oxygen. I does he have a single fan? Are there, like, Paulie and Kara stans out there?
Matt LaGuardia loves Paulie, and I will call him out on this on
like,
air.
Ironically or unironically?
It seems truly non-ironic that he enjoys.
I want to ask Matt LaGuardia a question. Would you let him into your house?
I think he would say yes. I think he would let him anywhere.
That's crazy. How about this? I do this game with Rob sometimes. Like, would you let the person babysit your kids? Obviously, the answer is no for Paulie. Who on the challenge would you let baby? I always ask him this about survivors. Like, who would you let baby? And it's you. By the way, with Survivor, it's usually like everyone but three people.
Right.
Nicole, it's like maybe 3 out of 18 with Rob. It'll be like 15 but like the, but like, you know, it's, that's a good question. Like, who would
I was going to ask you that exact question earlier of who would – because I don't have kids, but you have many kids. Mm-hmm. And the only name I could come up with that I would feel comfortable recommending to you from the challenge as a potential babysitter, I would feel okay about Jenna watching your kids.
Yeah, I think that's a really good answer. I don't know what Jenna does. One of the problems with these people is that they're nice people, but I just think that the Instagram fame means that, like, for this whole time, I don't know how many of them work. Uh-huh. Like, are they able – if someone like Jenna, who I bet has a couple hundred thousand followers on Instagram, like, does she work or she does do a couple appearances and a few ads on Instagram? Because it is a big deal. I think it's like I'm not saying everyone has to work. I like, my wife doesn't work. Like, I'm not judging people don't work. But I think there's some – you're, like, more in the real world if you have to go to a 9-to-5 every day and – you know what I mean? Versus, like, you're just like, oh, just wait until the next time I'm on TV.
Right. I think we've seen.
And Jenna famously wanted to work at the bakery, but her dad was in jail, if you remember from that season.
Uh-huh. I think there is certainly something to the perspective shift in people like potentially Bananas, whose life is probably consumed by the challenge and things pertaining to the challenge.
Well, he doesn't have a job, but he pays the bill. One, he gets paid a lot of money to be on the show because he's worked himself into a big deal. And two, he, like, hosts some NBC show after SNL.
Right. But compared to someone like Wes, who has an actual occupation outside of this, I think there is a stark contrast.
Whatever he bragged about. But that's fine. Like, you, and by the way, it's fine to use your fame for that. But like what we were talking about before with the Survivor stuff, like, almost everyone who goes on Survivor has a real job, except for, like, the Dirty 30.
Right.
Where it's just like
Big Brother, no one has a job.
Nobody has a job. There isn't one person here who, like, works in a bank or is an accountant or is a teacher. Not one. I'd like to go up the first day and be like, all right, who has held a 9-to-5, like the same job for 6 months in a row? Raise your hand. You get first pick of, like, everyone else. I guess we need a new tiebreaker.
Yeah.
The Brits. I don't. Maybe it works differently in England. Maybe there's a different culture. But
I do not see any of the British people holding down any.
Well, they might try. The different. Like, I. God bless them if they try. And just like the first day, they, like, you know, screenshot their boss's conversation.
Yeah. I have a hard time seeing Bear working in an office environment.
Oh, CT probably works. I'm sure CT, he's got a kid. I'm sure he has a real job.
Okay. That's a good call. And actually, CT would be a good babysitter probably at this point. And actually, how about one name that I'm surprised – I think you may have mentioned in passing, but I'm going to call one of the breakout stars out of this newbie cast that I actually wouldn't hate having babysit my hypothetical kids. Turbo seems like a cool enough guy, right?
Turbo is a cool guy. It's interesting because people are talking a lot about him online, but then he kind of got like that weird Dodo edit this episode where like he just went on and on. They didn't have to show that, right?
I think they were just kind of – I didn't view that as like a burial by any means.
No, I thought – like if that had been on Survivor, I'd be like, oh, this person sucks. Like,
I agree with that, but I think that –
the type of show where even Bananas – like, I mean, this show literally had a cast member like insult the size of Bananas' genitals, and he is there like Boston Rob times 10. Like, they do not have sacred cows on this show compared to compared to the CBS shows that baby they're winners and stuff,
totally.
Right.
And that's why I feel like Turbo.
And also, you don't need to make fun that his English isn't as good as the other people. It's not like, I mean, you cast him he's interesting. I don't know. Is he as big as the other guys, or is he just one of these like comp beasts?
I don't know. He doesn't seem to be 6'5" or whatever, but I would not have him under 6 feet.
They should really have like a height thing in the first episode. I'd love to see stats on just like for the, you know, in maybe in the opening montage or something. Like,
we need a combine. We need a fresh meat combine.
By the way, that's an amazing idea. Like if Bill Simmons did that, he could like tweet at them. They would do it. Like, what do you want to see? If the NFL combine of people you basically don't know yet was on, and then on ESPN, and then on MTV they had like Hunter and like Davon doing the combine, you would 100% change the channel.
There's no question about that.
What's Cam 40 time? It's probably really fast.
I care way more about how tall and the size of Turbo's hands than I do about Kyler Murray.
I mean, you don't talk about the challenge that much. I would have to ask maybe Ali Lasher this question, but I would to the Survivor people, some of them listen, right? Like, oh. Do the challenge people listen or no? They're too cool. And
the people on the challenge listening to my podcast about the challenge?
Yeah.
No, absolutely not.
We could ask Allie. Some of them are like, they feel like they're corporations. So they're like too important for this stuff.
I don't know. I'm sure plenty of them check out Allie and Brian's show. I think Brian like knows some of them in real life.
Oh, he does. Okay, fine.
Yeah. But no, certainly no such encounters on this podcast. And frankly, I think we may be safe on this season of Survivor too, of not having people listen.
Oh no, the War Dog definitely listens, or at least like reads the tweets about what you're saying.
Maybe the War Dog, you're right. I don't know. I would be pretty surprised if anyone else did.
Pretend they're cool and they don't War Dog has no idea how to play it cool, but some of the other people probably do listen, but then keep it to themselves, which is probably the way you should do it.
If they're listening, I don't want to know that they're listening. I never want to know that anyone's listening.
I always agreed. That's what I liked about Seinfeld.
Yeah, you could be pretty comfortable that Jerry's not checking.
Who's
gonna
get mad? What we say?
That's versus funny.
New show, it's like, all right, we're talking about like people we know or something sometimes.
Yeah. To just kind of roll through the major storylines thus far, I feel like the season, at least on one hand, got off to about as hot of a start as it could have, having that Hunter and Ashley showdown in episode one, and then Bananas Go episode two, as Wes gets to kind of like gloat and get a big victory for him for the first time in a couple of years. And then we have CT come out of nowhere to leave in episode three. I think it's safe to say a hugely unpredictable start to the season, but are you worried at all that we may be losing too many of the kind of challenge figureheads?
I am, and again, now knowing there's only 9 episodes left, and like 3 of them are usually like a final or like a pre-final or something, it's not as big of a deal as if I knew like, all right, we're stuck with these people till May, or June basically, or season. It's not. Listen, we still have Zach, we still have Jenna, we still have Josh, who we know, you know, maybe more than the non-Big Brother people, but like the other people like Kyle, who's been there before and is in a major storyline, and Maddie Lynn, who's now definitely a big character. We got Wes. We have Nani, Cara Marie, Hunter, Davon. Like, almost every team has one person who is, like, extremely interesting, you know, previously, like, that we know. It's not like there's a lot of teams of anonymous people and then teams of two Titans because they did the new thing where, you know, there's a couple prospects who we know, like a Josh, but every team has sort of one familiar face. So it's not like it's a bunch of anonymous nobodies left.
Yeah, I'm going to be interested and somewhat looking forward to seeing what life without Bananas for the bulk of the season is really like.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be a good opportunity for people to emerge and see some stories that we probably wouldn't have had time for if Bananas and his kind of sucking the game up from every conceivable direction.
I mean, I don't look at the confessional counts for the show, but he's I'm sure even like this season he'll probably end up being like third. It does seem like Davon is taking the mantle. It looks like she's great at it. She was great at Big Brother. Like, she's very good at explaining what's going on, like Bananas does. I think she will give the producers what she wants. She's gonna get, as long as she's there, probably be their go-to confessional person.
When six people
are explaining the same thing, they'll use her as the way they use Bananas.
I agree with that. Are you thinking, this is just crossing my mind, but I feel like we've seen before sometimes some early eliminated people potentially come back to be like not mercenaries in later challenges, but to compete against the elimination team in certain challenges. Now, maybe this time around that's not going to happen because it seems like a vital part.
I don't think we have time for it.
Oh, that's true, too. Yeah, well, I just meant it wouldn't blow me away if they found a way to get Bananas back on this season in some capacity.
Have some dignity, MTV. You got rid of him. You're fine. He'll be on, you know, when the show re-airs in August or June or whenever you air your next season. We're really at 2 a year. We're basically at Survivor, but sometimes the seasons are longer than Survivor.
Right.
Where I think the last few years it's been two every single season.
Yeah,
you'll get him back soon. You can live without him for 9 more episodes. It would be if you want to bring him back on a season he's done. Really, my take is that TJ's on the hot seat because whenever Bananas wants to retire, he's going to be TJ immediately.
Oh, interesting. Are you locking that call in? It literally never crossed my mind.
I like TJ. All he has is that he's kind of likable for like a person who should not be likable at all. But he does he really add much to the show?
No, I agree with you.
I'm not a Julie Chen fan. Julie Chen's much better at her job than TJ is at his.
TJ is remarkably inexpressive in a role where it seems like there could be a lot more going on. And yeah, it seems like he almost sucks the drama out of situations where
I agree, right. Sometimes he should be like, oh, my God. I think Bananas would be a better host than I think Bananas. Bananas might do 10 more seasons. This show might not exist forever. Who knows? But right now, you know, seems to be in a resurgence and a renaissance. And I think I'm sure it's been discussed. I'm sure in some executive office they've at least had the conversation with him already.
So to me, it just seemed like given that TJ has done 20 seasons or whatever now, and everyone just kind of it goes without saying that TJ is going to be there and we all wait on day one to see TJ and have him show up.
Let me put it this way. You're TJ's agent, okay? TJ makes let's say $400,000 for the season. If you're holding out for like $600,000, you don't think MTV would be fine to be like, hey, you know what? We'll find someone who could do it on the cheap.
No, I agree with you.
He's not untouchable. Whereas like, you know, the Julie Chenzo were like, oh, well, you know, we've never done the show without you. We're nervous to try it.
Right. Yeah. And that is true. It's not the situation at all that they've never done the show without him. And it is, to be clear, this is just the first time hearing of this idea of Bananas potentially.
I got no inside info, but it's a fun theory. And also like
– No, I just yeah. – it makes all the sense in the world is what I was going to say. I can't believe I'd never thought of it.
Bananas is definitely friends with him, right? Like some of these guys hang out with TJ during the offseason. Right?
I don't know if TJ's hanging out with any of these people during the offseason.
Bananas is 100 times more famous than TJ. TJ's lucky if Bananas lets him talk to him.
Is TJ less famous than Bananas? I don't know about that.
Yeah, but friggin' Johnny Bananas is the star of the TV show. TJ's in the background.
TJ has had a career outside of being the host of the challenge.
Yeah, but I mean, he wasn't in the NFL. He was like a BMX guy before it was popular.
That's true. I don't know. I feel I certainly knew the name TJ Lavin growing up.
You might have incepted it. You might have like used to know, like you know the name, but I don't know.
That may be true. I don't know. I've certainly asked my friends, like my fantasy football thread.
Was he like the best? I feel like you'd only know like the best BMX rider, right?
I know Matt Hoffman with one T, not Matt Hoffman from Big Brother.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I could get any other BMX riders.
That's
know.
What I'm saying. So was he like the best BMX?
Yeah, he was like an X Games gold medalist every time.
Okay. All right.
I 100% knew Johnny Mosley as a skier.
He would have 65,000 followers on Twitter max if it was just from that. He might even have less now. I'm just saying.
Yeah. To clarify, there's no question I knew Johnny Mosley as a skier before he was the host of Challenge Stuff.
Johnny Mosley won a gold medal in the Olympics. TJ did not. TJ has 164,000 followers right now. So I was right. He would have 64 if not for the challenge.
Okay. How many does Bananas have?
He's on Book Cameo. You want to know what it costs to buy? I don't want to steal Rob's bit here, but
All right. Well, you may be absolutely right that Johnny Bananas in the year 2019 is more famous than TJ Lavin, but it seems like TJ's been in every episode Bananas has been in and more.
True. But they're, you know – they have different functions on the thing.
I guess either way, who is watching the challenge and not hearing of either of TJ or Bananas at this point? Sure. It's hard.
They're exactly equally as famous, probably.
Right? Yeah, it's hard to.
Well, but no, Bananas goes on the. How about this? Bananas goes on big podcasts like Simmons all the time, which is like one of the 5 or 10 biggest podcasts. I don't think TJ, if TJ ran into Simmons on the street, I don't think Simmons would book TJ.
Yeah, I don't know.
Does TJ have an interest? But that's also personnel. Like,
exactly. POV? TJ does not seem like he would be an enthralling interview.
No, but that's why he shouldn't be the host.
Yeah. No, okay, I'm with you. To clarify.
I don't know to see prices. You need someone like Malagori or somebody to be like the, like, who knows this stuff. Oh, here. $80 for TJ. Jenna is only 25. Zach is 25. Tony's 35. Shane should be a dollar. He's 25. And then I don't know. I don't know how to find more.
Okay. Well, TBD, I guess. I would chime in the comments on who's more famous, TJ or Bananas. I could see that one going either way.
Paul is only 35. Okay.
Okay. I am not at all questioning, by the way, your call that Bananas could easily replace TJ, and that would probably be a change that I would be on board with. It just hadn't occurred to me, and once I heard you say it, it just – the room started spinning with how much sense that made, and it was just like blowing my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who do you think
– Jemmy for $20. Jemmy's my favorite all time.
Is she – oh, I actually had a thing I wanted to say about Jemmy, which is I felt like – before, I don't remember when I saw this, but I think it was right around the premiere. I essentially felt like I knew Bananas could not win this season because Jemmy is constantly tweeting about the curse, and Jemmy obviously knows how this goes.
Clean up your social media, Jemmy. Come on, you're better than this.
The way we will know Bananas wins another season is when Jemmy doesn't start the premiere episode by tweeting about the curse.
Gotta block. How about this? Block Jemmy. And I just call you my favorite, Jemmy, but now you're canceled. You gotta stop spoiling the show.
Sorry, Jemmy. Jemmy talking about the curse is how we're gonna know when Bananas wins again. Because she'll stop doing it.
Unless she's a next level competitor, which we know definitively that she's not. And she does it. Bananas $100, by the way.
Oh wow. So above TJ.
Yeah. Knight was my favorite guy of all time on The Real World, if you remember Knight. And so like I love just her through association with Knight.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't see their season of The Real World, but I certainly do remember Knight from his potential appearances on the challenge.
Mm-hmm. But that's also the type of person who's sort of, especially Jemmy's, sort of been made obsolete. Because she could go on a show, and she's a great narrator, and she'll stir up drama even though she's not at the center of it. She's more of the instigator. But zero chance to win, right? Is just not competitive in the challenges.
So I completely agree.
That's the type of person who I think the show has gone to, like, what, like the challenge version of GameBot, which is just somebody who's like built in a lab to win this game.
Right. Jemmy is not there to be a competitor. She's there to give the confessionals. And I don't think she's even under any kind of illusion that she's ever going to win a season.
She's not. But then I like at this certain point, let's not have those people on the show, which again, I think the producers agree because they haven't. The one other thing I'd want to say, which we mentioned, is like, if I could talk Jeff Probst, I would say Jeff and John Kierhofer, like, you got to watch the challenges. Think about how big that they're going. They're going big. And I understand you don't have world-class athletes like the challenge does. So you can't put them on top of a building in Sao Paulo and make them jump. I understand that, right? And the challenge appears not to have lawyers for some reason, where CBS has lawyers.
None of the players can afford lawyers.
I mean, it's insane. Like MTV is like, oh, yeah, of course we're going to let this person do this thing, which will clearly give them a concussion. But I do think
– Hey, are you a CTE truther on the challenge?
Oh, I'm a CTE truther in general.
No, of course. But do you think it's a relevant point of discussion on the challenge?
I think you should study. I think Amanda Rabinowitz should study it.
Okay.
I do think that you have to think outside on Survivor. You have to think outside the run around, get some puzzle pieces, do the puzzle. This is the challenge every single week. Because we both said we hate the challenges. Like, think much bigger, right? Like, yeah. They're stuck in this bubble that's so small. Like, if someone was guessing what the challenges in Survivor were, you're like, no, you don't understand. Sometimes they have access to an ocean and sometimes they don't. But really, it ultimately ends in a race to do a puzzle and you barely need to watch most of the time.
I think they are under the potentially flawed, potentially not flawed impression that the action shots are what people really enjoy about the challenge.
Great. Yeah, it's beautifully shot.
Right. And the – and it's not like the action shots aren't what people enjoy on the challenges as well. It just seems like
right. Sometimes it's like I cannot believe that they're about to do this on the challenge.
Right,
like,
and I don't think we're
taking a week and like a zillion dollars to set up.
I don't think we're suggesting that Survivor should be having people jumping from truck to truck collecting rings or whatever. But just the monotony, it almost feels like, of so many Survivor challenges being exactly like you described. Run around some kind of obstacle course. Maybe there will be water. Maybe there won't. And then you're going to do a puzzle. It really feels like the same thing, essentially week after week, season after season, where even though the challenge is doing a lot of similarly structured challenges from season to season, they never feel like, certainly at any point from week to week, like I'm seeing anything even close to what I saw the week before.
Yes, I agree. It just in every way is blowing out of the water. Mandatory viewing. That's my one piece of advice to them.
Yeah. Who are your teams to watch at this point? Who do you think are the really strong pairs that could be in there with a shot?
I'd say my favorite right now. You almost have to go with the favorite to make, because the team doesn't necessarily win, right? It's probably going to be a person that wins at the end of the day, possibly.
It could. Right? You never know. But I am at this point still thinking it will be a pair winning.
If it's a pair, I'd say I just have to go with whoever has Maddie Lynn, which is Kyle. I think Maddie Lynn and Kyle have to be the favorite. Wes, you know, who got such a good edit also, beating Bananas, Wes and D, is definitely a favorite. I'd say, you know, I could almost point to the teams that are probably not going to win. Josh and Amanda are definitely not going to win, right?
Yeah.
Day and Bear probably not going to win.
Jenna and Gus probably not going to win.
Yeah, that's true. Paulie is way better at these challenges than I thought he would be, because he's not that big of a guy.
Yeah, Paulie is really crushing it so far, and he has such a sick partner. It's ridiculous.
Yes, yeah, the Natalie thing is big, but just Paulie in general has been way better. And then Leroy and Shalene are not going to win.
Yeah, I agree with that. I would say Cam and boy Ashley can stack up with pretty much anyone.
Yeah, oh yeah, Cam and Ashley's really, now Ashley's like short but like thick as hell, right? Ashley is not that tall, but
it is
like
from steroids truck. That is why he is this way.
Right, but so there are challenges where the length will definitely hurt him, but there's so much luck in what challenge you get. I mean, some of them are there, you never get a carnival game on the killing floor or the elimination floor, but sometimes you'll get something which doesn't really, you know, maybe caters to endurance or is a little bit luck, but, you know, you could get the wrong challenge and you're just going up against somebody that's so much bigger than you and there's nothing you could do.
When we were talking about Bananas really performing well in the daily games, but losing some eliminations, obviously, these last few seasons, if you think about what they were, it was that, like, he and Tony had to like balance something in a swimming pool.
It's been a lot of coin tosses.
And then the Light Bright challenge against Devin was at like,
yes, very unlucky. He's been very unlucky.
Very unlucky in the eliminations.
The Light Bright, right. And he's really good in the dailies, which I think is ultimately like we have more knowledge from the dailies than just someone being like 4-4 in a elimination. That's just not enough of a representative sample size.
Right. Oh, and I also think Nani and Turbo have got to be in there with a chance too.
Oh, Turbo. Nani and Turbo for sure. Yeah. I mean, it's really like looking for who is a weak link.
Right.
So Leroy and Shalene, like that's, you know, a weak link. Josh and Amanda might be both weak links, but right. A team like Turbo and Nani don't have a weak link. It's good to see Nani back. I feel like it's been a couple seasons that we haven't seen Nani.
Yeah, I'm very into having Nani back on the show, and I like it when we get sprinkled. Like, I thought it was fun. I know it didn't end great for her, but having Sarah back, I guess she had been on relatively recently with Jordan as well.
Yeah, no, Sarah didn't have a big.
Yeah, okay, maybe not. But it seems like every so often they do throw in a person that it feels like I haven't seen in years. Like, didn't Shane take a long break in there potentially?
Yes. Yeah, and then there was I'm blanking on her name now. But she was on either last season or two seasons ago, and she's literally from the 90s. She's from Semester at Sea.
Oh, Veronica?
Veronica. So Veronica, if she plays again after starting with January, she will be on Decade 4 of MTV Reality because she was on 1999. I think almost because of that stat, she has to play again, even though she's really past her prime.
Like the Ricky Henderson stat, right?
That he played with, like, people's grandparents or whatever?
Well, I think Ricky Henderson played across...
He played in four decades?
Yeah.
I mean, Nolan Ryan certainly did, right? Like,
yeah.
But that would be just absolutely incredible. Four decades. I think Kenny Anderson... I'm playing on her name. I don't watch some of, like, the women fighting shows, but Kenny Anderson's, like, first wife who I think started on The Real World but moved to some of those like Real Housewife type shows, even though it wasn't Real Housewife. I think she's been on reality TV at this point for she's like decade seven or something. Like she's been on like four like nonstop for like 30 years at this point with like a bunch of I'm blaming on her name also.
Yeah.
But that's really goals, as the kids say, like just being on well, you get to four decades of reality TV, and that's really something.
Yeah, that's crazy. All right, Keith, anything else from the challenge that I have not gotten to at this point?
No, I think we really hit everything. I'm definitely excited. The truth is Survivor's been meh, but I also think like there's so many power players left and very few like irrelevant people that I think we could have some really big time, maybe like a big time merge. And hopefully it just won't be spoiled by the twist. And the challenge, I think we're especially if we get rid of like the weak links in the next couple weeks, you could have some like really like titanic battles the last few weeks to, you know, just to get into the final.
Yeah.
The challenge is really the best in the beginning and the middle. At the end, when there are less people left, especially like towards the end, and there's usually like a layup that's probably going to lose anyway, the challenge almost goes down where a Survivor usually goes up, although the season like last season really ended way worse than it started on Survivor. But the challenge, like when there's 34 people there, the possibilities are endless.
Totally. Well, Keith, thank you so much. He is, of course, once again, on Twitter, at Keeve26 and 32fans, and Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast are where you can be finding him on a regular basis. Thanks so much for coming on and taking so much time today.
Yeah, oh my God, I didn't realize how long it was.
I just looked at the clock and it's crazy. But no, time flies when you're talking about Survivor as well as the challenge. So we will be talking to you guys, I'm sure, at least by next week when the new episode of Survivor rolls around. And I'm guessing relatively soon again with the normal challenge crew to kind of catch up on a little more of the specifics there. Until then, I am on Twitter at Colin Stone. You can email the show, domandcolin@gmail.com. And for anyone interested, we do weekly bonus episodes talking through classic reality TV seasons over at patreon.com/domandcolin. I think Dom will be back next week, although TBD on that front. Either way, we will talk to you very soon. Take care, everybody.